using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Wednesday, the 24th of November, year of our Lord 2021, day 618 of the emergency, the worldwide emergency. And as we head towards a future where they are working as hard as they can to make sure it is one of austerity and depopulation and total control and observation, we're going to take a look at what is happening with the strategic destruction, I guess we could call it, the strategic petroleum reserves. What is Biden up to? Well, it's not too hard to tell. But we're going to really begin with the authoritarianism that is being demonstrated without any reserve in Australia and in Austria. Yeah, you don't have to get all your kids vaccinated, just the ones you want to keep, said an Austrian journalist, state media journalist. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Well, we have Reason Magazine headline says, COVID-19 has made democracies more authoritarian and authoritarian regimes even worse. Well, that's one way to put it. What it has destroyed is any idea of a republic, any idea of individual liberty, quite frankly. Democracy is just a mob, as our founders well knew. They said democracy is, you know, several wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. And they've made that determination without us having any input into this. So I'm not that big on democracy, frankly. It doesn't seem to work because the people have now realized that they can just take whatever they want. We've got looting lefties basically affecting national chains now. This is something that is focused and centered in California, but not limited to them entirely. As I point out here, this is the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance. The world is becoming more authoritarian as non-democratic regimes become even more brazen in their repression. And many democratic governments suffer from backsliding by adopting their tactics of restricting free speech and weakening the rule of law, exacerbated by what threatens to become a new normal of COVID restrictions. Now, the thing that bothers me about Reason is that from the very beginning of this, they have always said, well, we don't want to get in the way of corporations. If corporations are doing this, even if they're marching in lockstep with the government, and the definition, that is the very definition of economic fascism, a unification of corporations and business or government. And if they can't see this, if they can't see that the corporations have made themselves deputies and enforcers and hall monitors for the government so that they can get favors out of this. How blind do you have to be? This is not, as long as it's not being done by the government, because if it's being done by corporations, we know that corporations are not evil. Government is evil, say the libertarians. And they would never do this. They have to be responsive to what the marketplace wants, to what their customers want. And if they aren't, then they'll just go out of business. Not if they are in lockstep with the government. The government will protect them. I mean, didn't they see this last year? And yet they still will say, we don't want to have a government coming in. They'll criticize DeSantis and the Florida legislature for saying that private companies are not going to be allowed to mandate vaccines for their customers or for their employees. Oh, no. Well, you leave them alone. That's authoritarian to say that. No. The purpose of government is to defend individual liberty. And that means whether the mob is coming out of Davos and it's, a couple of dozen billionaires, or whether it is, 100 people in hoodies and cars with hammers smashing in the windows and taking whatever you have. Either way, the government is supposed to stop that. Travis, could you turn on this monitor here that seems to have gone off? So 69 countries have made violating COVID restrictions an imprisonable offense. Two-thirds of those countries being ones that this group that talks about democracies considers to be democracies. Albania and Mexico have allowed prison sentences for violating their arbitrary COVID dictates. In Albania, you can get up to 15 years. In Mexico, you can get 12 years in prison for violating their dictates. More than 20% of countries have used their militaries to enforce COVID controls. The normalization, they said, of increasingly militarized civilian life after the pandemic. This is why I talked about from the very beginning. I said, look at this, Operation Warp Speed. Yeah, they're going to brush through this thing with no testing. And it's going to be delivered by the military. The military is the key partner in all of this. The government's involvement in this is military. And it has always been DARPA and these people that have been involved in these germ games from the very beginning. And so that's what they're noticing worldwide, because this is a worldwide plan. The normalization of increasingly militarized civil life after the pandemic. You're going to get used to seeing the military on the streets, like everybody got used to seeing them put all of Washington, D.C. very quickly behind fences and barbed wire. Oh, we never would do that at the border, for instance, if you know, there was a threat to the country from gangs coming in or drug cartels or trafficking kids or just, you know, uncontrolled immigration. People who were not even bothering to test for this deadly pandemic. No, no, no. They would never rush up borders, you know, and have the troops go to the border to protect things. No, but they will in Washington for themselves. And you'll get used to it. After a while, nobody even bothered to report on the martial law in Washington, D.C., Meanwhile, 42% of countries have rolled out voluntary or compulsory apps to be used for contact tracing. That was the very first thing that Greg Abbott here in Texas did with the amount of the massive amount of money that was given to him by the Trump administration. He spent $300 million right away on contact tracing. And the only reason that that got any attention, not that the media had any problem with a state government spending $300 million to watch our whereabouts everywhere. I mean, you had mainstream media, you had the New England Journal of Medicine and others saying, well, you know, this is kind of creepy what China does in terms of surveilling everybody, but we could really use that to fight this pandemic. So we should do it here. We should think about that. You know, they're going to be doing a better job because they can surveil their citizens and watch them constantly. So we should do that as well. So they had no problem with $300 million being spent for that purpose. They were just concerned because the guy that had it looked like a shell corporation. Maybe because it was. A particular concern for this group, this NGO that's looking at democracies, are the eight non-democratic regimes. Azerbaijan, Bahrain, China, Kazakhstan, Qatar, Singapore, Thailand, Turkey, where those apps have been made mandatory. Mandatory. Who would have thought in 1984, said the NSA in the Snowden slides, as they showed the iconic Macintosh commercial in 1984. Next slide, you got Steve Jobs holding up the iPhone, and they said that this would become Big Brother. Third one, and that the zombies would line up to pay for it. Who would have thought, said the NSA, as they laughed at us. Walensky, the director of the CDC, recently praised the, quote, really strict lockdowns deployed by China, a country that no healthy democracy should be using as a model for good policymaking, says Reason. Well, I'm glad they agree with that, because they have been the model for the kind of internet censorship being carried out by the technocratic elite here. You understand, in China, yeah, it's communism, central planning and all of that, but it's also fascism, because you don't have a business there unless President Xi and Communist Party leaders have got a stake in it, just like here. Just like here. They're just a little more subtle about it. You know, put it on Hunter's laptop, or you give a stock tip to Pelosi or whatever. A little more subtle about it. here's one of the reasons why, and I keep, every time I make a comment about Trump, pointing out what the guy has done, what he is currently still doing, what he intends to do in the future, how he continues to brag about this bioweapon that he funded and pushed out and continues to push it, telling everybody how great and wonderful it is. Whenever I say anything about that, people say, well, who do you want for president? Well, let me say over and over again, is these people typically don't watch the show. So I won't belabor the point today, but the solution is not in Washington. It's local. It's not top-down. It's from the bottom up. Let me give you an example of this from this article. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican, Missouri, wants to give the Commerce Department more power to decide what products can lawfully be bought and sold in the U.S., despite the fact that he voted against the Commerce Secretary, Gina Raimondo. He literally wants to give power to someone he believes is not qualified for the job. And I'm saying to you, and I say to the Democrats as well, that if you want all of your problems solved by the president, to paraphrase Gerald Ford, any presidential office that has enough power to solve all of your problems, has enough power to take everything from you, as we're now seeing. That is the insanity of this, to think that we are going to give the ring of power, not even to Boromir, but to Gollum. So, it's, these are Gollums that we have running on the ballot. It's not even somebody who is self-delusional, thinking that they're going to use this power for a noble purpose. No, the founders of this country had the wisdom to know what power does to humans, just as J.R.R. Tolkien did, because they're both coming from a Christian understanding of human nature. They understand that power corrupts even good people. It corrupts even good people. How much more so the people who are not good? And here's a good example. I mentioned the quote from this guy in Australia. His name is Michael Gunner. He's the chief minister of the Northern Territory in Australia. And I just have to say that it just didn't do it justice to read what he had to say. You have to see it to believe it. You have to hear his voice. You have to see the obsessed, power-hungry look in his eyes, this petulant, angry man. And what he is saying essentially shows that he's frustrated because deep down he knows that they're losing. Listen to this petty dictator, Michael Gunner, Northern Territory, Australia.
Do you think at all that your rhetoric around calling people anti-vaxxers, some of whom were vaccinated, has had an impact at all on vaccine take-up in parts of the territory?
No. And I want to repeat it. If you are anti-mandate, you are absolutely anti-vax. I don't care what your personal vaccination status is. If you support, champion, give a green light, give comfort to, support anybody who argues against the vaccine, you are an anti-vaxxer, absolutely. Your personal vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. If you campaign against the mandate, if you campaign against people being vaccinated in vulnerable settings, teachers in classrooms, I'll be really clear, at that point in time, people were actually supporting the idea of a teacher being unvaccinated in a remote community classroom with kids who cannot be vaccinated. I reject that utterly, and I still reject it. And if you are out there in any way, shape, or form campaigning against this mandate, you are absolutely anti-vax. If you say pro-persuasion, stuff it, shove it. We are absolutely going to make sure as many territories as possible are vaccinated. That is our best protection against this thing. And if you look at the Doherty modelling that's only come out since, that says if you double dose 80 in remote communities, 5 and up, I think you'll see our vaccine mandate is absolutely crucial to protecting lives, particularly Aboriginal lives. And I will never back away from supporting vaccines. And anyone out there who comes for the mandate, you are anti-vax.
Yeah, don't come for the mandate. See, it's not even about the vaccine. He seems to be worshiping the vaccine. Sieg Heil vaccine. You know, when you stick your arm up like that, you can, with your left arm, your right arm extended out fully, your left arm can then pull the sleeve back so the Nazis can stick it in your arm, right? Yeah, he says, well, you can stuff it. Well, he can stick it, can't he? He is frustrated. He is angry because he's losing. He is on his last leg. Oh, well, we got to get everybody vaccinated. And we got to get a third one as well, too, because, you know, the first two didn't work and they don't, everybody's getting sick at the same rate and on and on. You give a green light, he said, you give comfort. If you give support, if you argue against this, you are, you know, ich bin ein Anti-Vaxxer, right? Your personal vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. It doesn't matter if you have obeyed me, you must bow down to the lies. That is the essence of totalitarianism. And that's why Solzhenitsyn said, live not by lies. These people can blackmail you. They can terrorize you. And you can determine where you're going to, if you're going to try to live peacefully with them or to try to navigate through their obstacles that they put in your way, to what degree you're going to do that. But you don't, and that's what Solzhenitsyn said at the time in the Soviet Union. I mean, they had control of everything in the economy. If you didn't do what the party wanted you to do, you didn't have a job. Oh, wait a minute. That's what this is, isn't it? Yeah. If you don't do what the politicians say, you don't have a job, you don't have a home, you don't travel, you don't do anything. And so he said, well, you understand what to what degree you need to do whatever you need to do. But he says, even if you comply with these people, you have to not go. That's authoritarianism. But he said that totalitarianism demands that you must embrace their lies. That's what this guy is. He's beyond authoritarian. He is totalitarian. This is why George Orwell said the same thing. They demand that Winston says 2 + 2 = 5. You have to obey what you know is a lie. And the vaccine is a lie. But the importance is that you obey, and even more so than you obey, that you truly believe this. You cannot give comfort or support or argue against it. Your vaccine status, your obedience does not matter. We want your mind. If you're out there in any way, shape, or form campaigning against the mandate, because that's ultimately what this is. The masks were a placeholder for the vaccine. The vaccine is a placeholder for the identification and the global ID and the totalitarian authoritarian state. So he says, I will never back away from supporting vaccines. And anyone out there who comes for the mandate, you are anti-vax. Now, where have we heard that kind of thing before? Well, we've heard another great orator. George W. Bush, you're either with us or you're with the terrorist, right? That's exactly what this mindset is. You either embrace the Patriot Act with all of its attacks on the rule of law and its surveillance, or you're with the terrorist. If you stand up for the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, you're with the terrorists. That's where we are right now. So when I saw this guy, you know, first he makes you angry. And then when you listen to it a couple of times, you start listening to the way he talks. And when I saw, listened to the way he talks, it made me think of a comedy movie where there is another pompous tyrant who has a speech impediment. Now, here's an example.
So, you dare to wade us? To what, sir? Strike him, Centurion, very roughly. Now, Jewish rapscallion.
I'm not Jewish, I'm a Roman.
A Roman?
No, Roman.
Oh, your father was a woman.
Your father was a woman. No, not a woman, a Roman. So that's exactly this. And, you know, it's all there, except he's not quite as angry. This guy, Gunner, doesn't have a centurion to strike you roughly, but he's working on, you know, he's got a large private army, this madman does, and they all do. But in case you think that's unfair, let's just play these two back to back.
If you say pro-persuasion, stuff it, shove it. We are absolutely going to make sure as many Territorians as possible are vaccinated.
Strike him, Centurion, very roughly. Now, Jewish rapscallion.
I think that is a pretty fair comparison. This guy, Michael Gunner, really sees himself as the biggest dickus. Maybe he's just the biggest prickus. He wants to prick everybody, right? He says, if you say you're pro-persuasion, stuff it, shove it. Because, and they have accommodations set up for people, which reminds me of another Monty Python film, Brazil, where they would, before SWAT teams became commonplace. SWAT team comes in, takes the guy out, and, then they charge him for his own interrogation. Well, you know, they kind of charge you for your own incarceration in Australia, even if you are not sick, but you test positive. And there was an Australian company selling tests that just had recalled 2.2 million of them because they were giving false positives. No false negatives, not a single false negative. They're all preloaded for this type of thing. But even with that, they're locking down the entire country. Why? Because they had 9 positive cases. If these people had been put in the hospital, they would have said, we've had 9 people hospitalized. If they had died, they would have said, we've had 9 people die. No, they had 9 cases, probably asymptomatic. Or maybe they did have a cold. Who knows? So they say that, and I mentioned this from the very beginning, there was a lady in her early 60s, I think, who was retired. She's a pensioner. She's on a pension. And as they said that they could travel from one state to the other in Australia, they had shut that down. She was the very first person to take the flight. So she was on the plane by herself. And they had the press there to talk, oh, look, it's starting to open up. And when she arrived, there was an army of centurions who threatened to strike her waffly if she did not come with them to detention. And they put her in. She said, well, I just live right next to the airport. Can I stay at home? No. You have to go to our detention facility. 14 days, and it was $2,500. She said, I don't have $2,500. You didn't tell me I was going to have to do this before I flew. So now, $2,500 for individuals, but they have a group plan of tyranny. The tyrants are $5,000 for the family. $2,500 for an individual or a family can go for $5,000 to this place where you pay for your imprisonment. An additional 10 additional days will cost you only $1,750. So they give you a discount rate on that for the individual. But it goes way up for a family making a trip to the Northern Territory. It goes up to $3,500. There you go. So, yeah, just like Brazil. But let's take a look at Austria, for example. You have a op-ed piece that's on Eugypius Substack. That's the guy's name. Eugypius. It reminds me of the little Greek tailor, Euripides. Remember that? I can fix it. Euripides, I can fix it. Now, this is Eugypius. maybe he works for that Roman governor there. But he talks about the dystopic vaccinator dictatorship of Austria. You see, I think these guys learned absolutely nothing from the last war, did they?
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
We don't know anything about what happened, 60 years ago. Let's see, was it 60? 80 years ago? Yeah. Yeah, about right. So, anyway. Then they, as they're talking about what is happening in Austria, and this is written from the inside. This is a guy whose name is Martin Lichtmes, who was talking about what it's like inside Austria. He said, I was a bit too optimistic last month. Unfortunately, there can be no talk of any corona twilight in Austria right now. Our government, under the leadership of the unelected shadow chancellor, Alexander Schallenberg. How did they get a chancellor who's unelected? I don't know. But, maybe they just put him in. Maybe somebody that was there got removed because you had some. I know there's been some issues with the young guy, Sebastian Kurz, who was portrayed as a populist. But he wasn't. He worked for the globalists just like Trump. But so maybe that's how they got an unelected chancellor, Alexander Schallenberg. Or maybe he's just being sarcastic. Maybe he has a ministerial position in charge of this. because he's been appointed and he's taken charge, because we talk about Fauci being the unelected president. I don't know. Nevertheless, he says he's now ordered in rapid succession an escalating series of tightened measures, quote unquote, that's what he calls it. And the repressive character dwarfs all that has preceded them. He says, I've published a detailed account in the magazine Freilich. So he said this escalation reached its climax today when all of a sudden the government announced a full lockdown and how they're going to have mandatory vaccines in February the 1st. Now, I don't know. It's a big fine. I think it was $4,000 if you don't get vaccinated. And I don't know how often they assess that fine. Is that a one-time deal that you buy your way out of this toxic vaccine? I mean, that'd be a deal, in my opinion. If I could afford it, I would pay it. I think anybody would if they were in their right mind. But when I started looking at this, what stood out to me, because I had just a smidging of German when I was in college, and I looked at this, the headline of one of these articles, and it was all in German except for one word, lockdown. That's what the English language has given to this worldwide, lockdown. The prison term, lockdown. Well, we can be proud of that, can't we? And so there's Ganze Österreich, it means all of Austria, Ab Montag, on Monday, Fix in Complete, and you can figure that out. It's pretty easy, just like the English Complete, except it starts with a K and ends with two T's. Complete Lockdown. Complete Lockdown. All of Austria from Monday under total lockdown. A general vaccine mandate is coming for everyone in Austria in February. And so this commentator says, well, first there was a 2G rule. That was just for leisure facilities. Yeah, it's just optional. You don't want to get the vaccine, that's fine. But, you know, we're going to take away your recreational leisure activities, sports, going out to eat, things like that, bars. But now we have a lockdown for the unvaccinated, quote unquote, who are no longer allowed to enter stores and public spaces. And they have to provide reasons to the police for why they're leaving their homes. I mean, the Austrians were just watching what happened in Australia. And they say, yeah, we could do that. I'd like that. That really appeals to my nature, right? Austrian police officers now demand corona certificates from people who are just walking, even in the backwoods of Upper Austria. And they patrol Viennese supermarkets to make sure the unvaccinated pariahs are indeed only buying food and not toys. And he says, this is not a joke. They'll let you in to buy food, but you don't buy anything else. So anyone who, despite these vaccination information campaigns, which depended on carrots and sticks from the very beginning, not just now, anyone who decides differently from the dictates of the government, that is to say, anyone who does not eat up the propaganda unconditionally, is now demoted to a second-class citizen as punishment and subjected to petty harassment. But as he points out in this article, it's much, much worse. And it's going to be much, much worse. Much worse is coming. In Vienna, the state has already embarked on the next stage of psychological terror by removing the power to decide from the hands of the unvaccinated entirely and booking vaccine appointments against their will. They will be informed of their vaccine appointment by mail. This means that the names of the unvaccinated are already registered in their databases. It's what I talked to Sheriff Hathaway. I think, was it last week? I don't have a sense of time because this is like a show that never ends to me. Anyway, it was last week, I think, I talked to Sheriff Hathaway. Is that right? Yeah. And he was saying that. He was very, he wanted to show the fact that the CD, that this was being required to be reported by the government, to the local governments, to the centralized disease carriers, the CDC, and to their database. And of course, going back to August of 2020, when the CDC started putting stuff out about, first of all, how you're going to store and handle and dilute and the time frame in which you had to use these vaccines that were stored at a very cold temperature and on and on. There we go. You can find it where we have our show's archived on BitChute and other places. So that was last week. But anyway, when they were putting that out, they also had in there, and we want you to report this within, you know, 24, 48 hours or whatever of the event. And so they had all of the information there that they wanted from about the person who got it. And then to make this not sound so creepy and Orwellian and to dispel any concerns that people had, they said, well, this is because we've got to give you a second dose of this. And so we need to know what lot this was and what brand of vaccine you got. Because we don't want to mix Pfizer and Moderna. That was the beginning of all. Now they're just saying, yeah, mix them all together. They're all good. That was the editor of The Atlantic saying that. Oh, if you mix this one and that one, oh, that's excellent. The other one, that's as good. And the next one, oh, that's good too. You should do all of them. Mix them all together. You know, you can just get together and have a party and shoot up. You know, just pass the hypo. So in that August 2020 CDC thing, they also had a one little box there that showed this whole thing was a lie and showed what the real motivation was. They had a little box that said refused. Refused. Now, you don't need to contact somebody in 30 days if they refused to get the follow-up shot. It was about creating a database of the unvaccinated from the very beginning, and that's what they're doing in Austria. They have that those people who are unvaccinated in their database, and so they're booking appointments for them and then sending them and saying, this is your appointment to come in. He says they will probably also record the names of everybody who doesn't come or who cancels it. At least for now, cancellation is still possible, but for how long? The Minister of Labor has said, without test or vaccination, no more access to the workplace, and also no salary, quote unquote. The RKI chief, Wheeler says, we really shouldn't give those who don't want to be vaccinated the chance to evade vaccination by testing their way out of it. The tests are simply temporary. They're harassment. It's another stick. And after a while, they're not going to continue to use carrots and sticks at all. They're just going to use guns and billy clubs to force you to do this if we don't stop them. I'm giving you the bad news because you need to look at this clear-eyed and understand that as even though these people are desperate and they're losing, they're not going to quit. They're not going to give us back our freedom. They're not going to go away and mind their own business. That is not their nature. They have to be defeated. And so we can argue about the different ways that we should resist them. We should not initiate any violence, obviously, because that's their game. It plays into their hands. But they have to be resisted and defeated, and that has to be done sooner. This has gone on for 618 days, and I was calling them Nazis on the day that Trump signed that executive order because I knew this is what was happening. And I knew that the longer this went, the harder it was going to be to pull it back. Anyway, they said, he also goes on to say, the guy's name is Lothar Wheeler. He says, we really shouldn't give those who don't want to be vaccinated the chance to evade vaccination by testing their way out of it. And he says, we thought the point of this was to prevent the spread of a virus. Who believes that anymore? The Minister of Labor says no more access to the workplace without testing or vaccination and no wages either. So this author says in Austria says, so when will the police be at the door? When will vaccine refusal have criminal consequences? As I told you already in Mexico and Albania, you can go to jail for a considerable period of time if you violate this. It already has criminal consequences. Of course, no consequences for stealing up to $1,000 of merchandise at a time. That's the world that these people want to set up. Crime and chaos with them as the key criminals. When will it result in fines of the sort that will destroy people of modest means? In the climate that is descending around us, yeah, that's what they really mean by climate change, isn't it? Man-made climate change, or you can call it fascism, tyranny, Marxism. And the climate that is descending around us, anything seems possible. Social, legal, medical, ethical standards rapidly disintegrating. State overreach is becoming the norm. Of course, these quote-unquote tightened measures, which is what they call it, at the expense of the unvaccinated, have not had the slightest effect on the numbers. And he puts that in quotes. Been listening to Fauci. Which, according to the press, are once again exploding. Well, I guess not, because Fauci always says they're surging. The numbers are surging. The vaccine refuseniks, they call us. The hesitants. The querdinker. Or just the anti-vaxxer. That's a curse word for gunner. For gunner. And then he gives some examples of the people who are the left liberal blue checks on Twitter, the people who are pushing the Twitter mob to come after us. I guess we could call them the Hitler Youth, the brown shirts of Twitter, the blue checks. So they don't wear brown shirts. They have blue checks now. One guy says, and this is translated from German, 2G doesn't divide society. People who can and won't be vaccinated are doing the dividing. See? Everything is blamed on us. It's not the virus anymore. And it's not their policies. And the government didn't do it. It's one of my pet things when I hear people say, well, you know, just talking to a guy this last weekend when we took my daughter's car in to be fixed after a sheet of material came off and smashed the front up in the window. And so he's doing it, and we were talking to him about his other business that he had to shut down because of this. He says, yeah, COVID shut all that down. I said, no, the government shut it down. COVID didn't shut anything down. COVID didn't destroy your business. The government destroyed your business. The government is deflecting this to COVID. And now they're deflecting it not to COVID, but they're deflecting it to those of us who are the unvaccinated or the anti-vaxxer. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of being an anti-vaxxer because as soon as I learned that these big pharmaceutical companies, some of the richest in the world, have absolutely no legal liability for their product, that made me an anti-vaxxer. He says, and he goes on to say, more specifically, says this person, there isn't any division, only a secession of the minority. See, we're bad because we divided away from them. We seceded away from them. It's a group. It's a club. And you ain't in it. So you're bad. Anti-vaxxers, he says, use this division narrative mostly to portray themselves as victims. Uh-huh. But they're not. We're not victims. Even though they put us under house arrest, even though they kick us out of our jobs, even though they take away informed consent and the rule of law, we are not victims. We're the evil people. Here's some more of the Twitter statements that are being things that are being said in Austria. And by the way, listen to this because it's not really that much different here in the United States, is it? Vaccine refusers are causing such damage, both economic and psychological. This intervention is socially justifiable. Well, I've seen people say that here in America. They should be foregoing hospital treatment in the event of infections. Then they'll take the jab. I've seen that as well. Another one. What is this freedom worth if it's not accompanied by willingness to show consideration for others and for facts? Mm-hmm. See, we don't care about other people. Well, you know what? We're not the people who are poisoning and killing people with this toxic jab. We didn't steal money from people to make this. We're not the ones engaging in corporate corruption in the government. And we're not the one destroying the rule of law in our society. Not to mention the supply chain and the rest of the stuff. We're the ones who are standing for the principles that used to be foundational to all of Western civilization. We're standing for freedom and dignity. Anyway, what should really be understood is that we need a vaccination rate of 80%. Is that what it is this week? Is it 80% this week? Because we've heard that before, and then they started saying, well, no, now it's 85, now it's 90, 95. And then they just quit talking about herd immunity. But there's somebody says, we need a vaccination rate of 80%. And that is more easily achievable with child vaccination. So bring me your children, even though they have no risk. I don't care. I'm going to sacrifice them to the herd. I'm going to sacrifice them to this fiction of herd immunity. You can't have immunity if you don't have lasting immunity. It's just that simple. That's one of the reasons why they stopped talking about it. Plus, the third vaccination for everyone under a maximum of 6 months. Mm-hmm. This takes courage, I said. No, this is cowardice. This is cowardice and fear that he's talking about, calling it courage. It takes courage to hurt other people. No, if you want to dominate other people, you are a coward. You're not on the side of right. Anyway, unanimous statement of my vaccinated pensioners group in the pub. The lockdown is okay, but only if the unvaccinated a-holes are also forced to accept vaccination, because we have them to thank for it. So send the army and the police door to door. The same idiots have taken to the streets again in masks, and who took to the streets against masks and contact restrictions are now protesting vaccination that would make the masks and the contact restrictions unnecessary. It's actually hilarious. Well, it's not hilarious because even after you get the vaccination, they're still putting on those contact restrictions, spacing requirements that were arbitrary, just made up, and the masks, even for the people who are vaccinated. That remains. You're the one who is hilarious. Anyway, this one guy, a state media journalist, and this is the quote that I put for the title of the show today. You don't have to vaccinate all your children, just the ones you want to keep. Send CPS out there, because this is child abuse. His name is Hanno, not Hans. Hanno. Yeah, he's a Hans, though. Again, Hans is the neighboring countries of Germany. When they want to talk about some little, you know, boot-licking Sieg Heil thug raising their arms in a Nazi salute, they call him a Hans. And this guy is, yeah, are we the bad guys, Hans? Hanno? Hanno, you don't have to vaccinate all your children, just the ones you want to keep. They have actually no risk at all from this. We've seen the numbers, 500 or 600 people. When it was 370-something, you had Marty McCary at Johns Hopkins, went through and examined each one of those reported deaths and said, at the very best you could say is that these kids died with COVID, with a positive test, but they all had a lot of problems, multiple comorbidities that would have killed them anyway, just like the elderly. At the very beginning of this, average age of 79 to 80, and average of 2.6 comorbidities. And they're doing that now on the other end of the spectrum with the kids. Oh, yeah, you know, you got kids who are terminally ill. You give them a PCR test so you can get the bonus from the Trump administration. And then you say there was children who died from COVID, because that gives you another bonus, and the coroner gets another bonus for labeling it a COVID death. It was all incentivized. It was a rigged game from start to finish. You get a immediate cash bonus of $13,000. You get a 20% cash bonus for everything that you did for them. And then you get a cash bonus for declaring it to be a COVID death. And the family gets a cash bonus from the federal government if it's declared a COVID death. So the family's putting pressure on them as well. Everything is about the money. The money. So another chairman of the World Medical Association said, we are experiencing a tyranny of the unvaccinated. So it's not this pandemic virus that's killing everybody. It's the unvaccinated. And it's not the government that is tyrannizing everybody. It's the unvaccinated. We are to blame. We are to blame. Yeah, it's we can laugh at these people and we can make fun of them, and we should, because ridicule is the most effective weapon. And that was one of their own who said that. We also need to understand that, yeah, and we saw Charlie Chaplin making fun of Hitler. These people are little Hitlers, and they should be mocked. They should be ridiculed. It was Saul Alinsky who said it's the most powerful weapon, he said, because there is no defense against it. They need to be laughed off of the stage, off of the world stage. But what they want to do is not a laughing matter. Even though people were laughing and making fun in cartoons and Charlie Chaplin of Adolf Hitler, they understood how dangerous he was. And you better understand how dangerous these people are. You know, I see what I'm doing here with this, in a sense, what Frank Capra did in World War II. He produced a series called Why We Fight. And it was there to explain what these people intended to do, what they had done, and what they were intending to do. Now, Frank Capra never took up a gun. He didn't shoot anybody. But you have to understand what your enemy is. You have to have a vision for what you are fighting against and what you're fighting for. And that's what he did with the Why We Fight series. If you don't understand that, you won't have the determination, the understanding to get into this fight, whatever needs to be done. Because already, this is a world war. It began with economic sanctions, with lockdowns, with telling Main Street you're not essential, and all these other things that happened. It began with sanctions. It is a war against the people. It is a world war. Every government against its people. And it is a civil war at the same time. It already is. Hope it does not become an actual civil war with violence. But let me tell you that it is also going to result in a revolution, one way or the other. And it is happening, I think, because of this cyclical nature of human societies, that we are going to have a radically altered society by 2030. The question is, who is going to determine that society? Will we, the people, or will they, the globalists, determine this? We're in a war, we're in a civil war, and we are going to have a revolution. We're in the middle of it right now. So you better understand that. And again, we better start making connections with people outside of the internet. I won't get into the many reasons why the doctrine of mass vaccination is false here, he says. You know, you can talk about breakthrough infections. You can talk about the vaccinated being carriers as well. You can talk about the illusion of herd immunity when there is no lasting immunity. You can talk about the fading of the vaccine efficacy and how that was always a lie from the very beginning. The unprecedented side effects and so on, how none of their measures have worked, and yet they continue to double and triple it. Yeah, the mask doesn't work, so wear two of them, three of them. Who knows? How many are you going to wear? The problem is, he said, nobody is interested in these objections anymore. He said on Twitter, Michael Esders said, with 2G, 3G, 2G+, these are what the Germans and the Austrians labeled their policies. They have created a chaos of rules that can scarcely be enforced or implemented. The general vaccine mandate then becomes a salvation that is completely detached from any medical purpose. Finally, we have clear rules again, say the hoi polloi. The system of mass psychological direction, which sends all negative effects, all negative energy, discontent, anger, and hatred at the vaccine refusers, is now firmly in place. Don't delude yourself. We won't shake this thing with numbers and arguments. It's a war. And we have seen this thing play out before. I mean, it's exactly what the Germans did. You pick a segment of society, you vilify and demonize them. And that is happening throughout this country. Right now, it is focused on the unvaxxed. But it's also white, males, Christians, that type of thing. They got a lot of different ways to label you, but it's always about carving out their enemies and demonizing them, just as the Germans did, the Ausländer or the Jew, right? And that's what they're doing right now. For the vaccine faithful, who are in the majority and fully empowered, and they have the political and media apparatus behind them, they have made up their minds a long time ago, and they can no longer be dissuaded by argument. And it doesn't matter how many times you show the contradictions of these people. It doesn't matter when you show the kind of slavery that they want to impose upon us. These people don't care who are following this. But I show it because you need to understand why we fight this. Because you do not want to go into this. He said, when I would use terms like terror or blackmail or manipulation, the people that he knew that were buying into all this, just, you know, recoiled in horror. He said, I observed an astonishing ignorance of the arguments of those who are skeptical of vaccines and critical of the measures. In other words, why would you oppose any of this? They have no idea. Because they live in this consistent narrative that they see whenever they, you know, flip the channel or go to a different website, they see the same narrative, basically, everywhere. I mean, even, you know, supposedly the polar opposite channels of CNN and Fox are basically saying the same thing about the vaccine. Oh, yeah, you got to get it. Well, you shouldn't mandate it, but yeah, you got to get it. That's a slight difference there for their market groups. But they're both run by big pharmaceutical companies. He said, and I found a total unwillingness even to listen to the arguments, to the point of blunt emotional refusal. I was fobbed off of phrases like, COVID really exists, and hospital staff don't think it's very funny. One person said, I didn't show enough humility toward the opinion of Professor X or Dr. Y, that I overestimated my scope for assessing the situation, that I parroted things that I'd picked up from some babbling YouTuber. And so the German health minister, Jens Spahn, said Germans will be vaccinated, cured, or dead by the end of winter. So you look at this and you say, he says, many doctors say that BioNTech is the Mercedes among vaccines and that Moderna is the Rolls Royce, he said. No, I think they're both Zyklon B, Nazi. Spahn denied allegations that his ministry was hoarding BioNTech doses. This in so much demand. I know you all want this, and you know you just can't find it anywhere. So act now while it's available. That's the game that they've been playing a lot. But he says, you know, you're going to get vaccinated, you're going to be dead by the end of the vaccinated, cured, or dead. I don't know where the cure is, because they won't let people take ivermectin because it's cheap, right? And it doesn't give them any control over your life. Maybe the dead part is this. 4 times more vaxxed people are dying than unvaxxed. That's coming from data from the UK Health Security Agency and their vaccine surveillance report. So from the UK, we're seeing that for every 1 unvaccinated person who supposedly dies from coronavirus, at least four fully vaccinated people have died. How do they explain that? Well, again, they don't, because they're authoritarians and dictators. They don't bother to explain anything, and they ignore anything that conflicts with their narrative. Fauci speaks of unfinished business before he can retire. He's 80, but he says, nah, I'm not even remotely considering that right now. There's a lot of unfinished business I've got to do. Well, you know what his business is, right? His business is big pharma. Yeah, I'm not even thinking about walking away. Well, there's many of us who are thinking about leading him away in chains and handcuffs, but he isn't going to go, not on his own. He says, you are right now, officially, fully vaccinated equals 2 shots of the mRNA or 1 shot of the J&J. But without a doubt, that could change. That's on the table for discussion because, you know, hey, it's all about the money.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
said it's about the money, isn't it? Americans, though, says Biden, Americans got richer thanks to the vaccines and COVID policies. Biden says we all got richer. You know, because we had that money that was showered upon us. You know, I never saw the check. I was supposed to be able to get it. Neither did my son. I don't know. I've not got anything from the government ever. I don't expect to. Here's the reality. We did not get richer. The people he knows all got richer. The top 1% gained more wealth throughout all this. The top 1%. Gained more wealth than the gross domestic product of these countries combined. Listen to this. Japan, Germany, the UK, France, India, and Italy combined. The bottom 50% got nothing. That's what they mean. You will own nothing and you'll be happier. You know, you'd be happy little slaves. Kumbaya around the thing. You know, I know that at least 9 Americans got much richer. There were 9 pharmaceutical executives that were made multi-billionaires by Trump. So, yeah, some Americans did get richer. I don't know if they're all American or not. I mean, there might be foreigners who are CEOs of these multinational corporations, but they certainly got richer at our expense. Everybody, especially in the Democrat Party, is talking about wealth inequality. How in the world does Biden get away with these kind of lies? Oh, that's right, the media. America is the only major economy, he said, the only one in the world where the economy is bigger today and families have more money in their pockets today than they did before the pandemic hit, he said, during a Monday press conference. Well, the economy is bigger, Wall Street is bigger, and the fortunes of these billionaires are bigger, but that's not the people who are the bottom 50%, they're not getting anything. The top 1%, more than the combined GDP of Japan, Germany, UK, France, India, and Italy combined, was just their gain. They gained that much. Some of the biggest economies in the world. Net zero. When they say net zero, you know what that means? That means that your net income is going to be zero. Your net freedoms are going to be zero. Your net worth will be zero. When they start talking about net zero in terms of this climate change, the climate that they're changing is the climate of our society, of our governments, and it is man-made. And they're going to destroy it. They're taking from the poor and giving to the rich, says Epoch Times. And Spiked, which is a publication, you had an author, Kotkin, that's quoted in this article, said, quote, extreme climate measures have driven the loss of traditional blue-collar jobs in manufacturing, construction, and energy, while other environmental regulations have boosted housing prices. The West is on the road to serfdom. Always happens when you allow the government to have too much power, because they will take everything for themselves. They've got a slogan, technology, not taxes. Technology, not taxes. He says that's not only meaningless, but it's deceptive, too. The range of taxpayer-funded schemes means higher taxes, subsidizing certain kinds of energy. Subsidizing electric cars or solar panels means higher taxes. Requiring businesses to adopt technology that they otherwise wouldn't means higher prices, and it means less choice. Everything they do is about taxes and dictates, mandates. For all their calls of higher income earners to, quote, pay their fair share of taxes, the political left doesn't seem to ask them to cut their fair share of emissions. Oh. Hey, yeah, that's a good point. Oh, yeah, you're not paying any taxes, are you? They're angry at Bezos. One of the reasons why he gave $100 million to Obama and his the Obama Foundation for this obscene monument he's building to himself, nearly $1 billion, probably will be by the time he gets it finished, because they don't project this thing to be finished for like another 5 years. What an obscene ego trip that is. All these people that you're going to spend $1 billion to build a monument to yourself. You can't think of anything better to do with $1 billion than to do that for yourself? I think it's right now it's just under somewhere between $800 and $900 million he's going to spend on it. Yeah, there's no poor black kids in the inner city that you could help, are there, Obama? No, instead they're going to name a park or a parking lot or something after John Lewis is what Bezos said, I'd like to see you do that. But otherwise, there's no strings in any of this stuff. Yeah, that's corruption writ large. The Telegraph in the UK, reporting on Boris Johnson's government plan to go to net zero, noted that lenders, if you're going to buy a home, lenders could be forced to abide by the targets for energy efficiency certification before they provide home loans. This could mean more expensive mortgages for homes that perform badly. Or they could encourage the take-up of measures such as wall or roof insulation. So in order to nudge you, well, let's just say what it really is, to coerce you into doing what they demand, they can say, well, if you don't pass, if your home doesn't pass a certain energy metric measurement that we've got here for this in terms of efficiency, we'll charge you a higher interest rate. Or you can spend money and you can, you know, do things with insulation and change the structures. Either way, it's going to cost you money. But no, it's technology. It's not taxes. And it's not taxes if we don't call it a tax. Yeah, they called Obamacare a tax, but these things really are taxes. A translation is, achieving net zero will likely require putting mortgages out of the reach of working class families unless they upgrade their home to make them less carbon intensive. Same thing they're doing with cars. Same thing they're going to do with food. We're going to put all these restrictions, and you see this happening very subtly with food, for example. And Colorado and California has already done it. There's a Colorado measure that was on the ballot. I don't know if it passed or not. They're talking about it this last summer. I should have followed up on it to see if it passed. But, you know, they were going to put restrictions based on, you know, treating the animals humanely. And it's not really about treating animals humanely. It's about shutting down local farms. That's what it's about. We want to have X amount of space per pig. But they don't mind shutting your homes further and further, making them smaller and smaller and smaller. So those types of things that can even come out as something that is about treating animals humanely, they should go back and look at Fauci's experiments. But look what he did to the kids. But they can do that type of thing. They can do a lot of different things to make fuel more expensive so you can't use your car. They mandate all kinds of things being added to the cars in the name of safety, as I've talked to Eric Peters so many times about at epautos.com. And all of that just makes the car more and more expensive. And now they're doing that to the house as well. That's the back door way. Instead of coming out and saying, we prohibit you from having a car, using a car, having a home, eating meat, instead of doing that, they just make it very, very expensive. Because, hey, they can just keep printing money for themselves. Wall Street is a big money printing machine for these multinational corporations, just like the Federal Reserve is a big money printing machine for the federal government. They can spend whatever they want and give it to their friends. And as they make everything more and more expensive for the rest of us, that just means that, it's one of the perks of being in their club. So unless you upgrade your home somehow, you won't be able to afford it. And you have to upgrade it in the ways that they define it. Home ownership will only be available to those who can afford certain kinds of technology. Car ownership will only be available to those who can afford expensive electric vehicles. And then electricity itself will become more expensive. And gas could be banned. Yeah, electricity will become more scarce. We're going to talk about Biden and his strategic destruction of petroleum that he is putting in place. One person said, and this is a guy who's a CEO for Stellantis, and he says, I can't imagine a democratic society where there's no freedom of mobility because it's only for wealthy people to own cars, and all others will use public transportation. That's exactly what they're all planning to do. And even his company is planning to do that. They're all calling themselves mobility companies. They will all work as a a subsidiary of the government. The government will allow them to enter certain areas because the cars will be self-driving. Apple knows this. They're at the forefront of all this. This car they're going to come out with in about 5 years or so, they say, will have no steering wheel, no pedals. And oh, by the way, that means that they got to control you because you're the wild card. You're the problem. You human drivers, we would be just fine if we didn't have these human drivers out here. So get rid of the human drivers and everybody can take this little shuttle car that is owned and rented by the ride by Apple Computer. That's what this is really about. They have been very much about and totally upfront about the fact that they don't want you traveling. They don't want you owning anything whatsoever. You have, and I just saw this, maybe this was 2 days ago, Howard Stern, I might have to run for president just to clean up these anti-vaxxers mess. Well, I don't know, who's ever going to clean up the mess that his show is? One of the most disgusting, idiotic things. I've never watched his show, by the way. I knew somebody who was on it once. And fit right in. But it's a very disgusting display, isn't it? I've heard excerpts from it. And this guy is, as I saw that, when I first saw it, I tweeted it out. And I said, just when you thought we'd reached peak depravity and peak tyranny, we have this guy who's become a multimillionaire off of his perversions and his unbridled hedonism. And now he's going to tell us that people who don't subject themselves to an authoritarian regime are, quote, a sad commentary on my country, he said. He says, this is my country, and I've got too many morons living here. Well, I would agree with him. If we didn't have so many morons living here, Howard Stern wouldn't be a multimillionaire. He is the poster child for the Sodom and Gomorrah morons that we have. Absolutely. Robin Quivers was there, according to this article. She said, well, you were all about freedom until the morons got a hold of the place. Yeah, I was all about freedom until people started doing things that I don't approve of. And then I'm not in favor of freedom anymore, right? And he says, I could just clean it up in 2 seconds. Yeah. Yeah, he would be the perfect politician, wouldn't he? Yeah, because that's what these guys are all about, ego trips. It's all just a big ego trip, and I don't know anybody. Well, yeah, I do. Donald Trump has a bigger ego probably than he does. Angela Merkel's husband has gotten into the spotlight so he can criticize people who are unvaxxed. See this? All of the little Nazis are coming out of the woodwork everywhere. But this is the world that we're going to live in. Here's an example of it. You know, in Hong Kong, the Chinese communists were able to subject that stringent Hong Kong resistance. Gerald Celente has talked about this several times on Pat and Monty. He said, think about this. They couldn't stop those people. They were coming out constantly. They carried umbrellas to protect them against the stuff that was sprayed on them by the private army of these communist madmen. They could not stop them, even though they were putting people in jail. They were determined. So what stopped them? It was the pandemic. Locked it down, busted that. Now, here's what it looks like on the other side. That was the only thing that the Chinese had, but it worked. Taking out even the people in Hong Kong. And I got to say, when we had the pleasure, when I adopted my daughter, I've mentioned this before, we came back through Hong Kong. And it was actually cheaper for us because of the flights. It was actually cheaper for us to stay a couple of days because we had credits with a hotel system. And if we came back, you know, like on weekday versus weekend, that type of thing. So we stayed a couple of days in Hong Kong. And I got to say, it was one of the, I would say it's the friendliest big city I've ever been in. And I've been in a lot of big cities, London and New York and, you know, Chicago, all these different, and a lot abroad. But it was the friendliest big city. People would see you looking at a map, trying to figure out where you're going, and they would just walk up to you and spoke perfect English, and they would say, can I help you find, you know, what you're looking for and everything? That's never happened to us anywhere else before, but people were very friendly. And they have lived under freedom because the British didn't really want to rule them. And as soon as they could, they turned them over to China. And you had Milton Friedman talked about Hong Kong in his Free to Choose series back in the 1980s. And he talked about them as probably being the closest to a free market economy that we had anywhere in the world. When we were there, you would get Hong Kong dollars, and they would actually be printed by different banks, which is the way the banking system used to work here in the United States before we had a central bank. You would have particular banks would issue currency. They would have to back that up with reserves, so you didn't have the kind of nonsense that's been done by central banks. And, of course, they had a reputation, and, you know, they had to keep that reputation up in order to back that up. But that was one thing that I thought was really strange. But, you know, they had that kind of freedom. And so now we look at what is happening there, and you've got a little bit of an outrage and complaint because Jamie Dimon, or actually Demon, is probably a better way to pronounce his name, he got into Hong Kong without following any of the mandatory 21-day hotel quarantine. And when Carrie Lam, the communist puppet that is there, who's been pushing back against these protesters, when Carrie Lam, the chief executive of Hong Kong, mentioned that the reason for his lenient treatment was because he manages, quote, a very huge bank with, quote, a key business in Hong Kong, unquote, that got people kind of upset, you know. But, hey, that's the way it is. We have one rule for the little guys and another one for Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan. Question about why Dimon was allowed to enter the territory without complying with COVID rules, Lam said, quote, the justification is related to the economy, and this is a very huge bank with a key business in Hong Kong. He's too big to quarantine. He's too big to fail. He's too big to jail. He's too big to quarantine. He needed to come, and he needed to work for a day in Hong Kong. But there are restrictions, including restrictions over his itinerary, so it's manageable. It's okay. We can manage the risk, but not for you. No, no, no. No risk is manageable for you. Hong Kong is pursuing a zero COVID strategy, just like China, because she is a Chinese puppet. All of this is just a beard for their tyranny. People's lives are being endangered by fact-checkers, says one individual, and that's absolutely true. Facebook fact-checkers who are telling people that they can't talk about this bioweapon, this toxic bioweapon, the Operation Warp Speed Trump shots, they own nearly $2 billion of stock in a vaccine company. Oh, yeah, they don't have any conflict of interest there, do they? Thomas Massie, by the way, put it in a meme, Congressman Thomas Massie. He said, who pays the paychecks of the fact-checkers, the vaccine fact-checkers who claim to be independent? Well, you know, they've been partnering with Johnson & Johnson. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Energy policy, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and the implications for that. But Before we leave the vaccine topic here, and I've got a little bit more information I want to say about it in terms of some of the toxic meds on this Wednesday, the 24th of November, there was a great parody piece of a guy who, and I'll play it for you and then tell you who this is. Actually, I've got his name here. It is Ryan Long. He's a comedian. And I was surprised that they let this go on YouTube, but they did. And what he does is he does the whole thing cheering Pfizer. I guess he should call it Let's Go Pfizer. But he does it from the standpoint, really kind of subtly pointing out with satire, how these people who have always opposed big corporations are just totally on board and cheering everything that Pfizer is doing, trusting everything that these people are doing. Here we go.
My name is Dustin, and I hate big pharmaceutical companies, except for Pfizer. You know, I did go to Occupy Wall Street. Now I'm a little more concerned with occupying a space in my tattoo sleeve with my new Pfizer tat.
Pfizer.
You Pfizer? You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I watched the Martin Shkreli doc, and it pissed me off what he did raising those prices. What an ethical company does is take money from the government to make the product, have the government force people to buy the product, get the government to pay for your commercials, then print money to subsidize it. If you asked me a couple years ago, I wouldn't have thought that I'd be wearing a big pharmaceutical company's t-shirt, but, you know, Pfizer's just different, you know what I mean? They're not like other companies. So they had to play a couple dollars back in the day for fraudulent marketing. Yeah, it's called faking it till you make it. Obviously, their haters are coming out of the woodworks now that they're on top. Yeah, my pronouns are Pfizer. I'd say about 50% of my identity is that I hate pharmaceutical companies and 50% of my identity is that I love Pfizer. Maybe I'd get Pfizer shaved in my head, sort of like black guys do with Nike. Do not get me started on fast food corporations unless you got a minute. Companies like McDonald's won't even pay people a living wage. You know, whereas a real company like You-Know-Who paid some of their employees, like Alan Borla, about $21 million last year. So, yeah, take notes, McDonald's. $21 million for one employee. They didn't have to do that. You a Pfizer guy or...?
Yeah, I already got Pfizer, man, yeah.
Pfizer?
I got the booster, too.
Are you going to get a second or third booster or just the one?
No, I'm going to continue to roll up.
This guy's got a mask on his face.
I'm hoping to get to five.
Yeah.
Respect, bro.
All right, man, good.
I'm sort of like a feel the burn guy, and I know Bernie Sanders said we need to end the greed of Big Pharma, and I do agree with them that we need to end the greed of 99.999999% of Big Pharma. You know, the big banks, they're against you. If they had any of your own interest at heart, the S&P 500 would just be Pfizer 500 times. Pfizer should team up with Nike, who I hate, to make a sneaker. Bezos! Yeah, the only way that I would be caught dead with a Tesla is if Pfizer acquired the company. 10 things Big Pharma doesn't want you to know. I mean, I'll post this after I scan through it to make sure there's nothing derogatory with my guys in there. Yeah, I wish the CEO of Goldman Sachs was right here right now. We'd throw hands. I just retweeted an article about why Big Pharma's bad and then put Pfizer's logo in my Twitter handle.
You know, I think, Ryan, you've got a big career. That was Ryan Long. I think you got a big career possibly at Fox News, definitely at CNN. If you can hold that kind of Orwellian contradiction in your head there, you got a great career there. As a matter of fact, you know, talking about Big Pharma and how evil Big Pharma is and all the people that are allied with them, a jury has just held Walmart, CVS, and Walgreens all liable as opioid distributors. Oh, how about that? Except, they're not Pfizer and they're not Johnson & Johnson because it's not even just Pfizer, right? Johnson & Johnson, who was really at the epicenter of this thing, even the Sackler family, Purdue Pharmaceutical, they got the reputation for being one of the biggest pushers, incentivizing this, giving all kinds of money and perks and prostitutes to people, doctors who would overprescribe these opioids or even just prescribe them in the first place because they had the potential to get people hooked very easily. Very dangerous drugs. The government sat back and did nothing about it. They would wring their hands about an opioid epidemic. Oh, that's horrible. And we need to crack down on all these illegal drugs that are coming in here because, you know, we only want our legal drug pushers. We only want big pharma, not small pharma. And we don't want foreign pharma. We want domestic pharma that's going to be killing and addicting people. That's what we want. Made in America, the drug war. So Purdue Pharmaceutical, who became legendary in terms of that corruption, they were getting their stuff made for them by Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson was selling their own stuff, and they were selling it to Purdue Pharmaceutical. Both of them negotiated. This, and I don't support civil asset forfeiture, but this certainly would have been nice to see it. In the case of Johnson & Johnson, it's like, unlike El Chapo, who is a small pharma guy, big pharma is not subjected to civil asset forfeiture. For El Chapo, they just go in and take everything he's got. Or Pablo Escobar, they take everything he's got except for the hippopotamuses. They didn't know how to resell them. And there weren't any DEA agents, I guess, that wanted any pet hippopotamus. So they left the hippopotamus there. And now people are concerned, what are we going to do with the cocaine hippos? But when it came to the really big hippos, the opioid hippos, they didn't take anything from them. They negotiated with them. You had state attorneys general, a whole bunch of them got together as a group, and they negotiated a settlement with the Sacklers. They negotiated a settlement with Johnson & Johnson. And then when it was all said and done, they said, we just realized they've got a lot more money than we thought they did. We could have gotten a better deal. We walked away from a lot of money that was on the table. You should have locked them up if you were really serious about the war on drugs, but you're not. As a listener pointed out yesterday, it's asymmetric warfare, the drug war is. We only care about the freelance pharmaceutical guys because, you know, the CIA, and they can raise whatever they want. And the opioid fields for heroin, they can run crack cocaine out of South America to fund their wars. And, you know, that's fine. They just don't like competition from other people. But they have a truce, an agreement with big pharmaceutical companies. So it's kind of interesting to see there's going to be some penalties now for some of the big pharmaceutical Walmart, CVS, Walgreens. They say they recklessly distributed mass amounts of opioids. Where was the FDA in this? I mean, do we get to send any of the FDA people to prison or the DEA that looked the other direction? Again, DEA is not concerned about the opioid epidemic. The verdict supports claims by Northeast Ohio's Trumbull and Lake counties, which claimed that the pharmacy chains failed to institute legally mandated monitoring to screen for potentially illegitimate opioid prescriptions. You know, Rand Paul, when he got attacked from behind and they broke his ribs, that's a very, very painful thing. I know Karen had some ribs that were broken once. He can't breathe, but his were compound. He was in a great deal of pain, and he refused to take any of these opioids. This is a doctor. He knows what's going on with that. And he said, no, I live with the pain or try other things, but I'm not touching that stuff with a 10-foot pole, basically. That's not an exact quote, but that's essentially what he had to say. But these counties in Ohio, Trumbull and Lake, blamed pharmacies operated by CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart for not stopping the flood of pills that caused hundreds of overdose deaths and cost each of the two counties about $1 billion. This is the first time that pharmacy companies had completed a trial to defend themselves in a drug crisis that has killed 500,000 Americans over the past two decades. But see, the problem is that Johnson & Johnson, at the center of this opioid epidemic, Johnson & Johnson, who is known for decades about talc and their baby powder and what that did in terms of cancer for women, they continued both of those businesses because, you know, it was just too profitable to walk away from that.
Show me the money! So,
that's what they do. And if they proceed in this long enough, then you can get somebody like Trump who will help them, and Fauci, help them to transition over into an industry, vaccines, for which they have no legal liability. We're not going to ever see a statement saying that, we're going to hold them liable for the damage that they've done. Nobody is even criticizing them for this damage right now. And who has any power? I criticize them. That's why they take away my shows off of platforms, because I criticize these people. But the people in power are not going to criticize them. And you're certainly not going to have a jury trial. As RFK Jr. pointed out, that was one of the first things that Fauci did when he got into his position. He removed jury trials, our right to trial by jury to get compensated for injury. He removed that and for vaccine companies. And he's got a lot more business to do. Yeah. Pharma, that's my business, he says. COVID mRNA shots are a technology designed to poison people, says a Canadian doctor. Dr. Michael Palmer, Canadian board-certified doctor, a medical microbiologist, a professor of pharmacology and toxicology at the University of Waterloo, said in a video that was posted online last month how the mechanisms of the novel mRNA COVID-19 functions. And he knows exactly what it is. He said, just as I pointed out, Dr. McCullough has said the same thing now. It creates the toxic spike protein. This doesn't expose your immune system to a dead or weakened virus so that your immune system can defend you from infection in the future. I mean, that's the whole point. All these people say, natural immunity, that's no good. If you didn't have natural immunity, the vaccines wouldn't work. And the only point of the vaccine is supposed to be to train your immune system artificially. But if you've been exposed to a disease and you recovered from a disease, your immune system has been trained against that disease. That's what makes this whole narrative so incredibly crazy. The FDA files show 26,000 nervous system disorders from the Pfizer vaccine in just the first 2.5 months. But they're still trying to cover up their test data because they didn't do a test. They're trying to cover that up for 55 years. 55 years. Even the Associated Press can't believe it. The American Heart Association Journal has now published data that, again, this is coming out of the UK. A medical doctor claims is proof that COVID-19 vaccines are murder. And this is being published by the American Heart Association. The truth is eventually going to be there, folks, whether, they can run on for a long time, but sooner or later, God's going to hunt them down. And it's going to happen in this life, I think. Let's talk a little bit about Biden's energy policy, his strategic destruction. You know, I saw Biden make this statement, and let me play the statement for you here. Here's oily Biden talking about energy.
A big part of the reason Americans are facing high gas prices is because oil-producing countries and large companies have not ramped up the supply of oil quickly enough to meet the demand. And the smaller supply means higher prices globally for oil.
Oh, is that right? Well, I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I retweeted that as soon as I saw that clip. I said, liar. First thing he did was to block the pipeline, first of many things that he did to shut down our supply of energy and of oil. And he says that oil companies aren't producing enough. Are you kidding me? So to top it off, the Biden administration is now diverting the blame for high gasoline prices away from his domestic policies, shutting down, prohibiting leases where people, companies can get oil off of public land or whatever. No, shut that down. Shut down the pipeline, on and on. And then when we wind up with escalating prices, well, he's got something that's actually going to make it worse. I'll explain to you in a moment. He has shifted away the blame for higher gas prices from his domestic policies and towards shale drillers, ordering an official investigation into oil and gas companies for potential illegal gouging, despite no evidence whatsoever to support these claims. It's all about misdirection. It's all about projection of his crimes onto other people. That's what they're doing with the projection of all of their tyrannical actions. They're projecting those onto the unvaccinated, as I just pointed out. The Biden administration canceled the Keystone Pipeline in January and has since waived sanctions against a pipeline for Russia to ship energy to Germany. They effectively approved that pipeline. So is this about global warming? No, of course not. Because China and India get to build as many power plants as they want for several more years, and they don't have any restrictions at all as to how clean they have to be. They can be as dirty as they wish. So when you look at it, it's not just limited to the Keystone Pipeline that was coming in from Canada. And by the way, their rationale for that, I oppose the fact that you had, for the first time, the Trans-Canadian Pipeline Company, I think was the name that it was called, Trans-Canada or something like that. And they were given, a foreign corporation was given the ability to condemn property and to take it via eminent domain. I had a problem with that. You had farmers whose family had been on that property for hundreds of years, and they could come in and take a portion or all of it, depending on how big the farm was, for their pipeline. So I had a big problem with that. But I didn't have a problem with transporting oil from China to the U.S. for refinement. They had a problem with it because they said, well, it's a dirty kind of oil. I don't think it's going to be any dirtier than anything else once they refine it. But it doesn't really matter. If you're talking about global warming, if that's really what you're concerned about, that's what they say they're concerned about, but they're not, because that oil, if it is not shipped, if they shut down the pipeline, they're going to sell it to China, and China will put it on a ship and take it across the ocean, which is a higher risk of something happening environmentally than with a pipeline. It's also a higher risk if you put it on trains or trucks and ship it. The pipeline, even though it's not perfect, the pipeline has a far less chance of anything happening than these other forms of transportation. But it wasn't just that pipeline. The Biden administration, as of just 2 weeks ago, November the 7th, was considering shutting down yet another pipeline, the Michigan pipeline. And at the time, they were criticized for this, and they said, that's really going to raise prices of energy during the winter, heating oil and things like that. And as they were bringing that up, Jennifer Granholm, former Michigan governor who knows nothing at all about energy policies, they love to do that. You know, you got the Trump administration, they put Rick Perry in. He was a know-nothing governor here in Texas. And they put him in charge of the energy department. It's all about science and experts, right? Well, then get some scientists or experts. You can't even make a case that these former governors know anything about it. It's just a payoff because they don't want us to have any energy. Anyway, Jennifer Granholm, Biden's energy secretary, said when she was asked back on November the 7th if heating prices would rise this winter, regardless of the Biden administration's decision on the pipeline, she said, yeah, that's going to happen. It'll be more expensive this year than last year. She can't predict anything except prices are going to go up. This is strategic from a political standpoint. What he is doing with this strategic petroleum reserve, it is strategic from a political standpoint. Because what he wants to do is appear to be doing something. It may actually assuage a little bit for a short period of time. I'll show you just how little it is that he's releasing here. But it might temporarily show a little bit of a dip at the pump in these rising prices. But he's been shutting down production everywhere. And his goal everywhere, his key goals from the very beginning of his administration, he had two things, the LGBT community and energy, shutting down our energy and grooming our kids into the LGBT. That's his two priorities, first two things he did. So this pipeline, they call it Line 5, part of a network that moves crude oil and other petroleum products from Western Canada. It's about 500,000 barrels per day. And to give you an idea of, I'll get back to that in just a moment. How much do we use in terms of millions of barrels a day when we talk about the strategic petroleum reserve release that he's going to do? Jason Hayes, Director of Environmental Policy at the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, blasted the Biden administration for its energy policies. He said their work on the Line 5 pipeline to shut it down is, quote, just one more example of how they are divorced from reality. They're planning to power an industrial nation like the U.S. on solar panels and wind turbines. I talked about this when it happened. I said, well, the only problem is they don't want us to be an industrial nation. They want us to be a post-industrial nation. They don't want us to own anything, have a house, go anywhere, do anything, eat anything. So, yeah, take away the energy. That's the key. That's the key. It's not just taking away your money. It's taking away the energy to create these things and to do these things. So they want to power an industrial nation on solar panels and wind turbines? He said even solar panels and wind turbines require oil, natural gas, nuclear, and even coal to be produced because, as we saw in Texas, you got to have a backup system. They don't always work. But as I have said, you know, when a group that I was doing some work with about these renewable mandates when they first appeared in Colorado. We were in a lawsuit with that. And the guy would go around and say, well, you know, we have all these different forms of energy production. Which one is your favorite one? And there would always be one person who would say electricity. That's not energy production. That is the end product. That's not producing the energy. That is the energy you produce as the electricity. But it's just so clean. And I can just, you know, stick a plug in the wall and just tap into it. Isn't that great? It just, and I don't know how it got into the wall. It's just magic. It's magic. So this guy, the Mackinac Center, said, there's a dire picture of what shutting Line 5 could mean if people are unable to get natural gas or electricity as the nation heads into winter. He said, I hope it doesn't end like this, but where I see it going is unfortunately the same thing that happened in February in Texas, people freezing in their homes. Most of the time when it's extremely cold or there's a real bad polar vortex situation, typically it's cloudy and there's not a lot of wind. Cloudy with a chance of freezing. It seems like the only nations that understand that we require reliable, affordable, dispatchable energy are China and Russia. And they're the only ones that are producing energy. And they're more than happy to hold that energy hostage for the rest of the world. They're producing it without any kind of government handicaps. So Joe Biden has an answer for this. And he says, you can save money if you buy an electric car. He said this yesterday. Now, well, actually, it wasn't yesterday. It was just a couple of days ago when he was, the story from Breitbart was yesterday. But it was when he went to the GM facility and he drove an electric Humvee. Now, when I saw that, I immediately thought of pictures that I'd seen of Joe Biden and his Corvette. And one of the things he was saying was, well, it's great to be out of the White House because now I can drive again. So they have a rule that if you're a president or vice president, you're not allowed to drive yourself in a car. And that rule was there for people, you know, not even people who are showing signs of senility. I mean, it was just a rule that you can't drive a car. So he said, so I was vice president for 8 years. I couldn't drive this thing. So I saw this where he goes to Detroit to the GM factory, and they give him a Hummer that is electric, and he drives the thing, and, you know, hey, this is really fast, because they are fast in terms of acceleration, electric cars are. And he comes back and he says this, listen to this. These things can save $800 to $1,000 in fuel costs a year. Oh, okay, well, I'll have to buy one of those then. Because they're only $112,000. That means that in 112 years, it could pay for itself. Does Biden think these cars are going to last for 112 years? Does he think he's going to last for 112 years? Maybe so. I don't know. But yeah, isn't that a great deal? It makes perfectly good economic sense, right? If this thing saves $1,000 a year, then you should grab one of these. Yeah. It'll get to the break-even point in 112 years, assuming you don't have any repairs in that amount of time. He was frustrated that Americans continue to blame his environmental agenda for higher gas prices. No, just get an electric car, right? Get a shotgun. Don't get that AR-15. You know, you got over and under, side by side. Or you can get one of these electric Humvees and save $1,000 in a year, an entire year. So, anyway, he says, my effort to combat climate change is not raising the price of gas. What it's doing is increasing the availability of jobs. That's right. And his vaccine mandate where you got to get shot or you get fired, that's increasing the availability of jobs. To people whose only qualification is that they're willing to stick anything into their body. That's what the corporations start to look at and say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, we got a lot of people who aren't working. Maybe they don't want to work. Maybe they won't work for me if I fire these other guys who do want to work. And maybe I'm looking for somebody to help me in my company that has a qualification other than the fact that they have absolutely no discernment about life, liberty, or health. Anyway, Biden goes on to say, claimed that his government subsidies for green energy and electric cars would only help Americans to get jobs and only help them to save more money. I suggested they should come up with a new electric car, since, you know, it can save $1,000 a year. And maybe you don't have to go all the way to $112,000. Maybe you could find, like, the average price of a new car now is $45,000. So let's just say the electric cars are more expensive. Let's say $60,000. So in only 60 years, it could pay for itself. Maybe we could just call it the new Dodge Century. In a century, this thing will pay for itself. That's the Biden math of Bidenomics. But anyway, this is the same guy, by the way. So he's going to help us out now by releasing, after he has done everything he can to block production and to shut down sources of energy, real energy, to this economy, in the name of climate change, he is now going to start tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Let me tell you, he's got some other motives, because his Marxist banking nominee, Saleh Omarova, I've talked about many times, did her thesis when she was living in the USSR, going to school there. She won a Lenin Award. The thesis that she wrote was called Karl Marx's Economic Analysis and Theory of Revolution and the Capital. And she's been very upfront about what she intends to do. She wants to put people in the energy sector out of work. She says we need to bankrupt the oil and coal and gas industries. They need to go bankrupt. And so, you know, if you want to make an industry go bankrupt, what do? You put a Marxist in charge of it. That's what he's trying to do. She said, what I'm thinking about is primarily the coal industry, the oil and the gas industry. A lot of the smaller players in that industry are going to probably go bankrupt in short order. At least we want them to go bankrupt if we want to tackle climate change, just like Hillary. Oh, yeah. All you people in West Virginia, I want to put you out of work. But don't worry, because, you know, we got some great new green jobs that are coming up. Yeah, well, they didn't believe that, did they? So now, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Biden does this little press conference. I played a little bit of that there. He attacks other people for what he is doing. Oh, yeah, they're just not producing enough stuff here. You're shutting down production by fiat. So he makes his little announcement. You know, they're to blame. I'm going to release some stuff out of our emergency reserves. And then he turns around and walks off. I think it was the Babylon Bee said they've got a new Biden presidential portrait. And they showed a picture of him with his back, you know, to the, because that's what he does. He comes out, stumbles through a little speech, and then turns around as people are shouting questions on him, walks off. That's it. Not taking any questions. As Zero Hedge points out, he drops the details on the Strategic Petroleum Reserve release, and then he flees the media questions. Of course, we don't have to explain why Biden shouldn't bother with the SPR release. His administration explained why it didn't matter just last month, insisted that a jolt from the SPR wouldn't make a difference in long-term crude prices. It's all just virtue signaling. It's all misdirection. It's all smoke and mirrors. Just to make sure that you don't blame him. You know, he'll ease up things just a little bit and then ramp it down again. Biden's SPR announcement comes amid a long-delayed sale of oil exploration leases that are going to happen today in the Gulf of Mexico. So he's picked that as the, you know, these two things are going to show. See, I really care, and I'm going to try to step up production. Now, everything he's done has been to shut down production. He's putting in people in the administration who are openly saying, we want these companies to go bankrupt. We don't want to have any production of any oil. That's their radical position. Biden promised Americans that the drawdown from the reserves would be global in scope. He said, I met with a Chinese dictator, and he said that they will do this along with us. Well, we'll see about that, right? He said the coordinated action would span the globe, quote unquote, and its reach, and ultimately reach your corner gas station, God willing. As Zero Hedge says, so in other words, if the gas prices don't drop, you can blame God. And I kind of thought that Biden thought he was God. He certainly acts like it. especially if you know him from when he was younger, like the clip I played yesterday. Boy, you talk about somebody with a God complex. That was Joe Biden. Biden also reassured Americans that they could rest easy, knowing that stores of that are well-stocked this season, something they could probably appreciate after months of near record-setting inflation. But again, when they asked Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, who again has no qualifications other than being a political apparatchik, just a former governor, doesn't know anything about it, and she admitted she doesn't know how many barrels of oil the U.S. uses each day. She was asked by a CBS reporter, Ed O'Keefe. She said, I don't have that number in front of me. I'm sorry. She doesn't know how much. She's the energy secretary for the U.S., and she doesn't have any idea how much energy we use. And so he told her, he said, well, it's about 18 million. And he asked how Biden's decision to release 50 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve would solve the problem of high gas prices. What he's saying is, and this figure that he got of 18 million, that is the what was used in 2020, 18 million. That's the least amount. I looked this up. That's the least amount of oil use that the U.S. has had since 1995. So in 2020, with the economy closing down, you saw the gas prices drop because everybody was locked in their houses for the most part and not going anywhere. You had the U.S. consumption dropped to 18 million barrels per day, the lowest since 1995. Go back to like 2017, where it was more normal. It was about 20 million barrels per day. So it dropped about 10% last year. Typically, it was more like 20 million. So if we are back to normal activity, which certainly seems like it around here in terms of traffic, you would say that we would be at about 20 million barrels per day. Now, this Strategic Petroleum Reserve release that is supposed to be 50 million, you could look at that and say, well, that's not a big deal. That's, you know, that's what, 2.5 days. Well, that's one way to look at it, except the reality is that the reserves can only be released at a pace. The maximum pace that they can release it is 4.4 million barrels per day. So what you're really talking about here is about 10 days of release. And each day, if they do the maximum amount each day, that would be adding an additional 22% to the daily amount and doing it for actually, I think it's 9 days. It isn't going to make any difference. It really isn't. And the Biden administration said that a month ago. It's all just hand-waving. It's all just virtue signaling. It's all just distraction. And then criticizing the oil companies for not producing when he shuts down the leases and when he shuts down the pipelines. He's projecting. Senior petroleum analyst at GasBuddy.com said pump prices in the U.S. should decline 5 cents to 15 cents in the next 2 weeks. He said it's a little disappointing. Motorists will get some decline in prices, but it'll be on the smaller side. Well, tell that to the market, because oil prices on the market soared after he did that. Brent Sweet Crude, the global benchmark, rose by 3.3% yesterday after his announcement. West Texas Intermediate jumped by more than 2.5%. The president has, again, as I point out, notably suspended all federal leases on oil and gas. And he shut down pipeline after pipeline since he's taken office. And so to release 50 million gallons of this over 9 days, you're going to have an additional 20% for 9 days. No wonder he didn't want to take any questions. Yeah, the entire, and then is he going to deplete this? Is he going to repeat this thing again, right? He's talking about releasing 50 million barrels of oil. How much is that based on what the entire reserve is? Well, we have had it up to 726 million barrels. The peak, that peak, was back in 2010. That was the highest that the Strategic Petroleum Reserves had gotten to, 726 million. Last year, or I should say at the beginning of January, January the 8th, it was setting at 638 million. And all through last year, you had people in the petroleum industry, because they're watching the price of oil dropping since nobody is buying it everywhere, and they say, hey, we need a little bit of help here. Trump, you're sending out subsidies to people. You got the CARES Act and all this other. Can you give our industry a little bit of help? Maybe what you could do is at least top up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which is down to 638 million. So it's about 88 million barrels low from where it was in 2010. That would have been a smart thing to do for the U.S. government, because you would have been able to top it up with 88 million barrels at very, very, very low prices, lowest they've been in decades. Trump didn't do that. He didn't do anything to help the industry. They didn't fill it up while the prices were very, very low. As they were saying back in January, the sale of 10 million barrels of crude oil will be phased in throughout the year 2021 as congressionally mandated, with deliveries expected to begin in May. Wait a minute. Is this happening even without Biden doing this? Mm-hmm. Another roughly 10 million barrels could be sold to raise up to $450 million in order to help to fund the Strategic Petroleum Reserve's infrastructure modernization plans. But they didn't do that either. And they didn't put that in the big infrastructure bill that just had $1 trillion. Because Biden doesn't want any oil. He doesn't want to modernize the infrastructure for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. He wants to deplete it. That's all this is about. Virtue signaling, projection, and then destruction. The timing of the additional sales, whether this year or in 2022, will be determined by the administration of Biden. One person said, I don't believe the level of sales will impact security of supply. If the sales are spread out, then the prices should be unaffected as well. And again, you know, Granholm, who attended the climate summit along with the rest of these people who are flying their private jets, the one that was in Glasgow, Scotland, said, well, we're focused on clean energy. Yeah. Just as Oma Rova says, we want these other people to go out of business. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project, to make sure the commoners own nothing, and the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. Talk about the looting lefties that are happening all over the country. This is getting so large that it's even affecting the stock prices of publicly traded companies like Best Buys. Take a look at Illinois, for example. We've gotten a lot of information, but this is a common thing. It is coming from the left. It's coming from district attorneys that George Soros has flooded with cash. I mean, these guys, district attorney races where people are now spending millions of dollars. I mean, this is unprecedented to see the race for district attorney have that kind of money in it. As a matter of fact, down in San Antonio, the district attorney that was there
Soros put a candidate up against him and gave him millions of dollars. And he exposed that. He said, look at this. Look at how much money this guy's got. And look at who it's coming from. And do you understand what his agenda is? And he won. But in most places, that didn't happen. They didn't make Soros a part of this. And these guys with lots of money won. And so you're seeing this happening in California. You're seeing it happen in Illinois, especially in Chicago. You had the stores shut down and vacated because of the lockdown under Trump. And then these vacant stores became targets of people who started looting. But now it is really expanded, really expanded. In Chicago, not just in San Francisco, 14 people rushed into a Louis Vuitton store. I mean, I'm speculating that everybody's going to this Louis Vuitton store. I got to go find out what they sell there. I don't know what it is, but it's really expensive. And they can sell it online because everybody's buying stuff online. You don't have to go to a flea market and say, hey, come over here. I got some stuff in the trunk here. You want some watches? I got those in my coat. You know, I got some other stuff in the trunk. No, they can do it online. You know, you got Facebook Market and other places like that where you can do it. I guess that's what's happening. But they went into this Louis Vuitton store outside of Chicago. They ran out, 14 people. They ran out with at least $100,000 in merchandise. And then in a Chicago suburb of Northbrook, police say 8 people took off with $66,000 worth of merchandise from a, wait for it, a Louis Vuitton store. They got to be going bankrupt. In October, November the 1st, at least 13 men wearing masks and gloves entered the same Louis Vuitton store and stole several items valued at $100,000. I mean, what they've got has got to be, it's got to be pretty expensive. I mean, think about how much you can grab and run out of there. I mean, if you got 13 guys and you're grabbing $100,000, I mean, you know, you're talking about just under 10 grand each, what they're able to carry out. You know, you'd be hard pressed to find $10,000 worth of stuff at the dollar store. So I guess everybody's, to be safe, people are going to start shopping at the dollar store, along with us. As the black population continues to drop in Chicago and in Illinois in general, few regret their move. Now, this is a piece that's coming out of the Chicago Tribune. And so they show happy black families around the kitchen laughing because they're out of Chicago. 5 years after leaving the South Shore, Jason and Jennifer Parks are convinced the decision to move their family to Northwest Indiana is the right one. And so they talk about how, you know, they've got a life there and they're very happy about that. And he does mention later on in the thing, he says, look, I don't want to villainize Chicago, but, you know, there's a lot of violent problems there. The family is among thousands of black residents from Cook County who left the city or for other states during the past decade. The so-called reverse migration out of Chicago has continued, lowering the city's black population by about 10% because the crime is the heaviest in the black communities. I mean, it is this looting that is happening now, that is going to the wealthy areas. But they've been having these drive-by shootings in Chicago. Legendary. You know, everybody talks, well, look at, and I've compared the death statistics of COVID, the people who died with COVID, to people who died with a Democrat mayor, Lori Lightfoot, just one Democrat mayor. Not talking about all the rest of the Democrat mayor's crime, but just in Chicago, you have weekends where you have a couple of dozen or four dozen or five dozen people killed over the weekend with shootings. And a lot of these are, you know, not people shooting each other, not gang wars, but innocent bystanders that are getting shot. And this is happening in the black neighborhoods. So they said that Chicago once held the nation's second largest black population. But now they're leaving. The people who aren't criminals are leaving. The people who aren't criminals or who aren't criminals in government are leaving. Lori Lightfoot is staying. That's why the Parks are getting out. The Park family. They said they used to live in the same block that Michelle Obama's family once called home until violence drove them out 3 years after they moved in. The guy said, I'm glad that we're out here in Indiana. I have friends. I have a sense of community. His wife is a triage nurse at the University of Illinois and Chicago Medical Center. She grew up in Chicago, but, you know, she's able to find a job somewhere else somehow. He said, "We feel safe. We really do. I know that violence is everywhere." Yeah, just look at Waukesha, right? "But if someone wants to hurt you, they'll hurt you. But I have peace here." I mean, it's just, look, it's just about assessing where the risk is. Anything can happen anywhere. I mean, you can walk out the door and a piano can fall on your head, if you're in the city, I guess. Around here, you wouldn't. There's nobody living up above us who are moving pianos. But so you want, if you don't want a piano to fall on your head, you move to a single-story building out in the suburbs. It's just a matter of containing risk because something else can kill you or somebody else. You know, like a guy who is allowed to, run free no matter how many crimes he's committed. Speaking of Waukesha. He goes on to say, "What I expect is if I'm paying property taxes and things like that, within a 10-minute drive in my community, I should be able to have access to most of what I need, most not everything, and I have that here. We got what we're looking for in terms of space to raise our family in more of a neighborhood feel." And that's the key thing. It's getting away from the violence that is tolerated by these Democrats who want to get rid of the police and who want to release the criminals from jail and not have any bail. It doesn't matter if they're violent or not. Black Americans no longer arrive in Chicago with dreams of finding work. In fact, most experts say those with less education and fewer skills are going elsewhere. After Indiana, Georgia, and Texas were the top destinations for black residents leaving Illinois each year between 2015 and 2019. One other person they talked to who moved to Phoenix, Arizona in 2013 said, "When I got here, it was so peaceful and friendly. It was like the difference between day and night." There are things that you can do here that you can't do in Chicago. Listen to what she said. "This is what you can do in Phoenix." That's where she moved. Yeah, Phoenix. "This is what you can do in Phoenix," she said, "that you can't do in Chicago. You can sit outside at night. You can't do that in Chicago. You can go for a walk at night. Can't do that in Chicago." So she said, "I saw the cost of living was much cheaper here. The job market was wide open." Well, you know, there's reasons that these types of things happen. And there's reasons that even though you're in a peaceful, mostly peaceful community like Waukesha, you have people like this accused killer. And we just had one of the children die yesterday. Heartbreaking. 6 years old. Died from his injuries. I'll talk about that in a moment here. But I want to talk about the district attorneys that are behind this. Now, let me just talk about that to start with, because this is the context for these criminal politicians and district attorneys. 8-year-old Jackson Sparks dies from injuries after being rammed by a black extremist at a Christmas parade in Waukesha. Headline from Information Liberation, and he's exactly right. That is what killed him, a black extremist. Yeah, how many times we hear white extremists? Well, this guy was a black extremist. He was politically motivated. And what he did was an act of terror. I had some people come back and say, "That's not terrorism." I said, "Oh, it absolutely is. This guy had terrorist motivations, for real." I mean, he's not criticizing curriculum or sex education. No, no, no. He has been galvanized and trained to hate people because of the color of their skin. And he sees it as a political thing. And so does the district attorney there. But let's take a look at this family and what they had to say. The parents said, "We'd like to thank everybody for your prayers and for your amazing support during this difficult time. We wanted to give an update to everyone. As you're likely aware, Tucker, our 12-year-old son, and Jackson, our 8-year-old son, were both seriously injured on the Christmas parade attack and have been in the ICU ever since. Tucker, by the grace of God, is miraculously recovering, the 12-year-old, from his injuries and will be being discharged home. But this afternoon, our dear Jackson has sadly succumbed to his injuries and passed away. Please know that they appreciate your continued prayers, the family, and tremendous outpouring of support for their family. They do, however, ask for privacy at this time to allow Tucker to continue to heal physically and for their family to heal and mourn the tremendous loss of their sweet little boy, who is now under the care of Jesus. He is the sixth person who died, the first child. There are nine children under in critical condition. And if you look, as I said, at that picture of the car, first of all, seeing it speeding down, it was not an accident. He wasn't running from a domestic dispute, as one of these mainstream media sources said. No, it was intentional. And even more so, as you saw how fast he was traveling, he slowed down and started selecting people. Yeah, probably by the color of their skin, because all the victims I've seen so far have been white. But you could see when he started running people over, he's changing direction, slowing down, speeding up, and changing direction. It was very deliberate, very targeted. And so is what this district attorney is doing. Free Beacon article says, meet the progressive DA behind the Waukesha bail catastrophe. Well, yeah, he's said things like, well, when we pay too little attention to the underlying causes and characteristics of individuals in the criminal justice system, we make significant errors, which can lead to greater problems. That's a quote from John Chisholm, Milwaukee County District Attorney. He's the district attorney there that let this guy out. Now, when he says when we pay too little attention to the underlying causes and characteristics of individuals, he didn't mean it in the way that it really came across. We make significant errors. Yeah, mistakes were made. Who made those mistakes? Chisholm has been a leading figure among the progressive prosecutors, quote unquote, a group of left-wing lawmen who favor diversionary programs and community building to locking up criminal defendants. Their growing influence over the justice system, much of which has been boosted by financial contributions from George Soros. And I talked about this as Obama was on the way out. He and Eric Holder said, we've met together. We've talked about how our focus needs to be. As they were leaving, as part of the transition over to the Trump administration back in 2016, before Trump was sworn in January 2017, the two of them got together and they talked about, you know, well, our focus is on getting people in to district attorney offices because that's how we're really going to change things. I said, well, that's pretty ominous. That has a lot of ways that they can make effects. You see, these are the people who are at the very top. This is Obama in the presidency. This is Eric Holder, who is the U.S. Attorney General. What do they realize? You better listen to these guys when they say all politics is local. They know that if you got the right sheriff or the wrong sheriff, or you got the right district attorney or the wrong district attorney, or the right mayor or the wrong mayor, that's going to make a really big difference. And they are focused on these local races. You better be focused on it because you're going to wind up with one of these district attorneys or sheriffs. You're going to wind up with a Soros sheriff or something in your area if you don't pay attention to this. That's why these local races are so important, and they're strategically picking this, going in right now into big cities, but also going into small ones like Waukesha. So Chisholm was elected back in 2007. He's taking credit for inspiring a new wave of prosecutors in cities like San Francisco, St. Louis, Philadelphia. He congratulated San Francisco District Attorney Chesa Boudin. By the way, that's didn't know how to pronounce his name. I looked it up. I watched it. It's just like Jethro Boudin, right? I didn't spell it that way, but Chesa Boudin. And he's about as clueless as Jethro, frankly. No, he knows what he's doing. Seriously, he knows what he's doing. I'll get to him in a minute here. So he congratulated Chesa Boudin, who was elected in 2019. And the two of them, Chesa Boudin is the guy in San Francisco. The two of them spoke at a forum earlier this year on the status of the progressive prosecutor movement. Chisholm and other progressives support reforms to the cash bail system, which they say criminalizes poverty. No, see, if you're poor, even if you're a murderer, you should be put out on the street again, right? You should have the privilege to go out on the street. It doesn't have, well, anyway. You can get somebody to put up the bail Anyway, he has acknowledged that his reform-minded approach could put murderers back on the streets of Milwaukee. He said, is there going to be an individual that I divert or I put into a treatment program who's going to go out and kill somebody? He told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in 2007. He said, you bet. Guaranteed. It's guaranteed to happen. And it doesn't invalidate the overall approach. Well, it does. And so he doesn't really care that this guy, this alleged killer, he left his ID in the truck. It was his truck. He was let out because he tried to run over his girlfriend, the mother of his child, with that same truck. That's why they had him locked up. They let him out. So, yeah, you can say alleged. Looks like it's pretty cut and dry to me. He even left his ID in it. On November 5th, there were charges that he punched his girlfriend in the face and hit her with his vehicle at a gas station parking lot. She is identified only by her initials in the court paper, but they indicate they've had a child together. He also did his own social media broadcast where he said that he had pimped her out and she was underage and all the rest of this stuff. I mean, this guy is a piece of work. And this is the type of person that Chisholm doesn't care if they get taken out, if they get put out on the streets again. This guy, the alleged killer, Brooks, is also charged with eluding police officers when they arrived to take him into custody. Brooks may have been a familiar figure to Chisholm, you think, given that he was arrested and charged about a half dozen times in Milwaukee County alone, while Chisholm has been district attorney. He posted bail on November the 11th. On Sunday, the 39-year-old aspiring rapper, that's why they talk about it. He's an aspiring, he's 39 years old. When I grow up, I want to be a rapper. Maybe he meant rapist. No, he's already done that. He's already done that. So check that off of his list. I don't know what I'm going to do when I grow up. Chisholm said Monday he's reviewing the bail decision of the earlier case, saying it wasn't high enough for a violent crime. Brooks's rap sheet, criminal rap sheet, and I talked about that. I said, you look at what this guy's got. He's got a lot of lawsuits against him, too, a lot of individuals and stores and stuff. He's got a criminal rap sheet that goes back to 1999. He was released from jail in February with only $500 bail after reckless endangerment and felony possession of a firearm. He's been charged in Milwaukee County for crimes ranging from marijuana possession to domestic abuse to weapons violations to trying to run people down. The progressive message, says District Attorney Chisholm, is a very difficult one to get through. That's right. It's not that we don't understand it, Chisholm. It's that we don't agree with it. I mean, just look at what happened. That's proof enough. We know more than you think we do about your agenda. Your agenda of chaos through crime. These people are trying to destroy our energy ability. They're trying to destroy our ability to eat and to live in homes and to drive cars. But they won't stop you from driving a car over a parade or over your girlfriend. Well, they don't have a problem with that. So he said, we're telling prosecutors, public defenders, community leaders, that we need to have community-oriented practices that range from anti-racism initiatives to diversionary programs for offenders. Yeah, I think they've diverted opinion away from what really should be done here. The primitive function, he says, of the criminal justice system must be recognized as being subordinate to the system's preventative and remedial functions. Well, here's the way you prevent crime. Right. He said we shouldn't be focused on punishing people, you know, like they are in the D.C. jail or like they are at the communications management unit or the place where they had Kyle Rittenhouse locked up. He was talking about how horrible the conditions were there. When he did the interview with Tucker Carlson, he said, my skin was bleeding because I couldn't shower for weeks. And he didn't have any running water. So he's talking about how brutal the conditions were there. Tucker couldn't believe it. But, I mean, look at what is happening in D.C. So is the purpose of jail, is that to punish people, even pre-crime, punish people? I mean, pre-conviction, punish people? or is it to prevent crime? You lock them up to prevent crime. You set a high bail level to prevent crime. For this guy, you know, he gets out with one felony, $500. Another one where he tries to kill somebody, his girlfriend, $1,000. And then Kyle Rittenhouse has $2 million put on him. The intention was, you know, they made it out as if Kyle was a threat to a lot of people when he wasn't. He didn't have a long, long criminal record going against all kinds of people like this guy did. But they made him out to be that kind of a threat, so they made sure that he didn't get out by putting a $2 million bail on him. He had to fundraise that with a crowd in order to get out. He doesn't have a lot of money. But this guy, they go out of their way because he's poor. Let's take a look at Boudin. Cheza Boudin. Pull up the picture. Show people what his father looks like there, Travis, if you're in there. District attorney, you know, it was just as his father, who was serving 75 years to life for armed robbery and murder, was let out of jail by Cuomo, just as Cuomo was leaving. So here's this guy, Cheza Boudin. He gets money from Soros to put him in. His father, who is a literal terrorist and murderer, gets pardoned by Cuomo. And he is district attorney there in the district where Nancy Pelosi lives. And he's just been open season on stores for shoplifting, among other things. So San Francisco District Attorney Cheza Boudin has decided to get tough on crime and to drop his commitment to social justice just weeks after securing the release of his cop-killing terrorist father, writes Information Liberation. His parents, who are very wealthy, you know, these terrorists of the Weather Underground, just like Bill Ayers, very wealthy. Kids who come from there's a picture of him. Look at that. I don't know. I wonder how he got that black eye. He must have run into a doorknob or something after he killed cops and a security guard as well. Three people they killed in this armed robbery. Jailed in the 80s for the murder of police officers and security guard during a bank heist. So you got these little spoiled rich brats just bristling with Marxist theory and wanting a revolution. And what they did was they robbed a Brinks, and in the process, these three individuals in a shootout. You had two cops and a security guard. One of the cops is black, one of the cops is white. I don't know about the security guard. And I mention that because race was very much a part of what the Weather Underground and these Marxists have been doing from the very beginning. In 1981, Cheza Boudin, the San Francisco DA, his father and mother, Kathy Boudin, both members of the left-wing militant group, the Weather Underground, took part in the ambush of an armored truck carrying more than $1 million in New York. The robbery was planned by the Black Liberation Army and the May 19th Communist Organization, according to the New York Times, and it led to a shootout that resulted in the deaths of Sergeant Edward O'Grady, Officer Waverly Brown, and Brinks guard Peter Page. Now, Marxists, the Black Liberation Army, you know, white privilege, white skin privilege, all this, it was originally white skin privilege, they were popularizing that. It was always about setting up a racist Marxist revolution. You can see that in this robbery. So San Francisco DA Cheza Boudin's father, Gilbert, was sentenced to 75 years to life for felony murder. He has served 40 years of it, and he was released by Cuomo. Now, his excuse was, Cuomo's excuse, and the same thing that Cheza Boudin said. By the way, this is all politically motivated. It was murder. It was terrorism and everything. But Cuomo says this was an incident in which he was just the driver. He wasn't the murderer. Come on. He's just as guilty, even if he wasn't the trigger man. When you look at what is happening in San Francisco by Cheza Boudin, is he responsible for these gangs of people who are going in and cleaning out the stores, or for people who go in and steal up to just under $1,000 per visit? Yes, he is. We all know that he is. He's enabled that. And so they are just as responsible for this. And this is why I say, you know, these people, I've used this analogy yesterday, or the day before. I guess it was Monday when I was talking about this. I said, all the people who want to say, Trump didn't do this. It wasn't Trump. It was the bad Democrat governors. Well, guess what? Trump's policies allowed the bad Democrat governors to do this because he didn't stop it. Just in the same way that Chesa Boudin is allowing these shoplifters and these gangs of thieves to do this because he's not stopping it. He has an obligation to stop it. Trump had an obligation to stop what happened last year, and he didn't do it. And Trump is even more involved because he's not just passively sitting by and allowing it to happen. He's actually paying for the getaway car and the ammunition and giving them the guns to do this. Can you imagine if you found that Chesa Boudin, and who knows, I mean, the kind of family that he comes from, the fact is that he was raised by Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground. That's why he is the way that he is. Dyed-in-the-wool communists. Boudin said that he has an identity as a Jew, and his experience having two incarcerated parents have each informed his approach to the criminal justice system. Well, he's become what his parents were. He's become a terrorist, stealing from people, because he is as big a part of that gang as if he was actually driving the car. And I don't understand how his identity as a Jew allows him to do that. You know what? Seems like if you're Jewish, you understand the Ten Commandments, don't you? You know, you don't kill, you don't steal. Do you understand that? No, he doesn't. He's just playing identity politics. So so Cuomo on prime time, now this is Cuomo's brother, had an interview with him, and on Cuomo's show, Chesa Boudin says, if people in my city don't feel safe, and if they can't go about their business and live their lives in safety, then we have some work to do. Well, yeah, you got a lot to do. But again, this is Cuomo, Cuomo's brother. This is being done in Pelosi's town. This is being funded by Soros. Yeah, that's the gang that you really need to worry about. More so even than these people running into stores with hammers and smashing and grabbing. Best Buy's has crashed on the stock market yesterday as margins slid due to, quote, organized retail theft. Zero Hedge writes, liberal socialist utopias, let's just call them what they are, they're Marxist dystopias, such as California, are a blessing for the deadbeat klepto hobos from around the world thanks to the state's lack of prosecution of shoplifting. But the same policies are becoming major headaches for nationwide retailers like Best Buy, because we've got a lot of this. This whole idea is spreading, just as George Soros said. And oh, by the way, folks, you know, you look at, I started by talking about how bad the crime was in some of these neighborhoods, and so, you know, the black people have gone to Indiana. Or you may look at this and you say, well, I don't live on Rodeo Drive. You know, one of these people in L.A. was saying, this used to be the safest place you could be. You know, Rodeo Drive, we had a lot of police. And so, oh, I thought you wanted to defund the police. It used to be a great place to be. And, you know, everything was so pretty and rich. And now these people are coming here to rob us. Because why? It's just, like the bank robber when somebody asks him, so why do you rob banks? He said, because that's where the money is. Well, why are they robbing Beverly Hills and Rodeo Drive? Because that's where the money is. And it isn't really going to help if you start to decentralize this. They'll just start. They've got cars. They'll go other places. They can go into Indiana if we don't stop this, right? It's kind of like the illegal immigrant from El Salvador whose kids were killed up in New York State. I think it was out on Long Island, killed by MS-13. And the father was crying, and he said, I brought my kids here to escape this kind of gang violence. And I said, that's the whole reason we have border control. Because if there's no control on who can come in, you can have good people like that father and his family who are trying to escape the violence. But if you don't have any control of the border, MS-13 is going to follow them in. And it's the same problem all over again. So I said, we're seeing particularly, this is Best Buy. The executive officer, chief executive officer there, CEO, said, we are seeing more and more particularly organized retail crime. You can see that pressure in our financials. And more importantly, frankly, you can see that pressure with our associates. It's traumatizing them, traumatizing the employees. And the interesting thing about this from a financial standpoint is that Best Buy, the people had expected that they were going to do good with this financial report. Their top line and their bottom line were much better than they had projected. But the problem was their margins because of shoplifting. And so because of that, their stock fell. And again, he says, even CNN is reporting this. The Best Buy CEO says a jump in theft is traumatizing the staff. They're looking up more products. They're locking up, rather, more products, and they're hiring security when they can. They said the tactic involves an organized gang of people who steal entire shelves, entire stores, of high-value products such as electronics, sell them online for a profit. Some incidents involved individuals bringing a weapon such as a gun or a crowbar. They said the gangs are much more dangerous for retailers and for customers who are shopping in stores. This is not happening after hours. This is happening, in many cases, while they're still open. The problem is that while store security and associates can take individual shoplifters to task, not necessarily in San Francisco, you might be the one who's charged with assault and battery because it's just okay for them to steal whatever they want. But they said while they might take individual shoplifters to task, they're not able to do much against gangs as they are outnumbered. If the theft grows too bad, then retailers will simply pull out of certain locations. And we've already seen that happening with some of the drugstores. But as I point out, the thieves have cars. They will follow you if you don't take care of the problem. So Walgreens is even closing stores. It's not just the high-dollar places that are doing that. It's places like Walgreens. And this is spread, as I pointed out, Information Liberation had a whole collection in one article of a bunch of links to social media showing these robberies happening in malls and places all over the country. WND says blue state anarchy, 30 robbers wielding hammers loot the mall as waves of mass thefts are flowing through California. And again, it goes back to if you steal less than $950 at a time, yeah, that's not prosecuted at all. We're going to do anything at all about that. San Francisco has had now, as of yesterday, 3 consecutive days of brazen shoplifting. 40 to 50 teenagers in one loot a jewelry store. And another one, you've got just an hour later in San Jose, a group of suspects entered a store in an outdoor mall, and they took an unknown amount of merchandise before they fled the scene. A group of 80 shoplifters went to Nordstrom nearby. And so this is getting to the point where Cheza Boudin is now facing a recall election, but don't expect that they're going to take him out. It'll be just like it was with Gavin Newsom. 3 arrested after 18 people break into a Nordstrom in L.A. In L.A. And as I said before, Louis Vuitton, Saks Fifth Avenue, Rodeo Drive, storefront windows are knocked out, snatch and grab, and one person, a rich liberal, said this used to be a safest city in the West, but it's not anymore. Anybody can come and just take. And it's getting very, very easy for them. Yeah, how about that? Defund the police. How's that working for you? We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show
or at thedavidknightshow.com to donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
Just a little bit more headline news, and some of this, again, going back to jails. As Rittenhouse was talking to Tucker Carlson, I mentioned it briefly, what he said about Lynn Wood and John Pierce. But it's absolutely amazing when you look at the details of what he has to say. I mean, Lynn Wood is one of these lying grifters that is a part of this Stop the Steal. And I've never seen a bigger bunch of liars in my life than these people. And that's why I opposed them as long as I could on Alex's own network. But as Tucker was talking to him about Lynn Wood, one of these key grifters in the Stop the Steal stuff, he said, "How long were you in jail?" He said, "I was in jail for 87 days. He said, "Lynn Wood was raising money on my behalf, and he held me in jail for 87 days, disrespecting my wishes. He put me on media interviews, which I should have never done. And he said, oh, you're going to go on and talk to the Washington Post, which is not a good idea, along with John Pierce, the other lawyer. Then he said, I was safer in jail than at home with my family." Carlson says, "Your lawyer said that?" "My lawyer said that. John Pierce, my lawyer said that, John Pierce and Lynn Wood." Carlson said, 87 days is a long time to be in jail. And he said, "It was very long, and I lost a lot of weight there." But he said, 87 days of not being my family, for defending myself and being taken advantage of and being used for a cause by these, by John Pierce and Lynn Wood, trying to raise money so they could take it for their own benefit and not trying to set me free. Let me stop here and draw another analogy to what happened in 2020 with Trump and with Alex and with Roger Stone and Steve Pachinik and all these people raising money off of this thing, leaving us in lockdown jail, doing nothing about these toxic bioweapons. Instead, what they do, they used it to raise money for themselves. What they did was exactly the same thing that John Pierce and Lynn Wood did to Kyle Rittenhouse. They did that to America. It's exactly what they did. I saw it when it was happening. I was there. I saw it. I confronted him with it. It's just, I don't know. It's the same thing that happened. And it's still happening. They're still raising money off of this. At least I think most people gotten wise to Lynn Wood. Now, Lionel was laughing about the complaint that he put in with one of these election things there. He goes, "This guy's not even literate. How did he get through law school? How did he pass the bar? Look at this. He can't even write a coherent sentence in this stuff." But what he was about was grifting. So Carlson said, "So you think they could have raised money for bail faster, but they didn't? You think that these people could have raised money, they could have raised awareness, they could have told people, hey, let's peacefully march to make sure that we get out of lockdown and, you know, let's have rallies so we can show that we're not going to all die." There's a lot of things that they could have led, could have done, but they didn't do that. Instead, it was all about Trump and the money. Anyway. Tucker Carlson said, "You think they could have raised money for the bail faster, but they didn't." He says, "Well, I believe sometime in September 5th, I want to say," said Kyle, "they had over $1 million and bail was set and it was able to be posted in September. So they could have had me sign the waiver for extradition and they could have had me back in Wisconsin and I could have been bailed out by mid-September, but they wanted to keep me in jail until the 20th. And his mother said the same thing. She said on Twitter, "They used Kyle to gain money, to gain Twitter followers. I felt like they didn't care about Kyle." Yeah, just like the Stop the Steal people. "They used the election to gain money, to gain Twitter followers. They didn't care about the lockdown. They didn't even care about the election, frankly. Nothing was done. Nothing." Anyway, he said, "Once I was bailed out by John Pierce, he said I was unorganized militia, which is blatantly false," said Rittenhouse. "I didn't even know what a militia was." Carlson said, "Wait, your lawyer said you were a militia?" And he says, "John Pierce said that. and it's blatantly false. I didn't know militia until after the fact, until November the 25th when I was watching some of the interviews that he did. I'm like, I'm not in the militia. I don't know what that is. Well, as we look at what is happening in our criminal justice system, we see that as far as this January the 6th thing, it's now being reported by Big League Politics, and they've got some new video that's been released. And, you know, we had reports that a 34-year-old Roseanne Boylan was trampled to death. They said she was trampled to death by Trump rioters. Then they claimed that she died of a drug overdose. But now all footage that's been released by the FBI appears to indicate that she was kicked to death by the Capitol Police. You can take a look at that. It's at Big League Politics. I'm not going to show the video of that. It's disgusting. But what is happening in Nigeria and what the Biden administration has just done as that is happening is disgusting as well. I've talked many times about Christian persecution in Nigeria and how the black Muslims there are coming after the black Christians, and it's just a slaughter. And here's one example of it. On the morning of Sunday, October the 31st, while Christians around the world were in church, one congregation in Nigeria was about to be attacked by gunmen. About 11 a.m., a group of bandits entered Emmanuel Baptist Church in Kaduna City, shot and killed two people, injured two more, took at least 60 hostages. The kidnappers took young and old people alike, and Christians in the area fear what is to come. Quote, among the people they kidnapped were several pregnant women, some that will soon give birth. There were also very old men and women and children below 6 years old, among others, said the Reverend Joseph Hayab, president of the Kaduna chapter of the Christian Association of Nigeria. He said, put in mind that when they kidnapped 121 Baptist students in July this year, family members and sympathizers had to pay hundreds of millions of naira, I don't know what the exchange rate is of that, to secure their freedom in batches. And up till now, we still have four students that they're holding as hostages. They said the Baptist church is the worst hit church in the state. Surviving as a Christian, he said, especially as a Christian cleric in Kaduna State, is largely by the mercy and grace of God if you are in one of these vulnerable communities. In the past year, not less than 10 clerics, he said, have been killed by armed gunmen and at least 30 kidnapped, some along with their family, and given humiliating maltreatment and abuse. This is all to suppress Christianity and to destroy the church. Now, as you look at that, I give that to you for context because this has been going on for quite some time. This is not an isolated incident. This isn't something that began on October the 31st. I've talked about how the Muslims are allied with the government there, and they're targeting these Christians and doing it on a regular basis. Now, the Biden administration yesterday is being criticized for removing Nigeria from the list of countries that violate religious freedom. Biden doesn't think that qualifies for religious freedom, what I just described to you. And I could keep on going. I mean, there's the death rate of Christians in Nigeria is off the charts. But we don't care about that. And we're going to open up the borders for people who are unvetted. But when they try to pretend that this is about people getting asylum, political asylum from dangerous countries, this shows the fraud. And it also shows the real perspective of the Biden administration, the real hostility to people who have religious beliefs. As a matter of fact, and then this is the other side of the equation, Biden's education department wants to roll back efforts to catalog teacher sex crimes. They didn't even want it registered. A few days ago, I gave you the in-depth report about how the California Association of Teachers, or California Teachers Association, I think it's CTA, not CAT, CAT. it was recorded by somebody who went. It was a sold-out thing, and what they've sold out to is grooming children for the LGBT agenda. They were talking about how, yeah, we literally stalk these kids. You know, when they were doing online classes, we would look to see where they were going on the internet. We thought, yeah, we can get this one as soon as they come back to school. And we set up clubs and we give them clever little names so the parents don't know what that's about. And we don't want the parents to be able, once they find out what it's about, say, was my child there? So we don't keep any records of attendance or anything like that because we want to hide that from the kids. And then we can get them alone. And I really miss it because, you know, we get them to where they're really embracing this new sexual freedom, these minors. And then they'll go hang out with their kids, their friends, instead of us. I mean, it was sick what was happening. And now the Biden Education Department wants Department of Education, Federal Department of Education, wants to make sure that we don't catalog teacher sex crimes. Well, that's convenient, isn't it? I've said from the very beginning, this LGBT agenda that they're putting against the kids, that's not about stopping hatred. It's not about stopping bullying. It is a pedophile agenda. It is to groom people. That's what these teachers are talking about doing. And again, in the broader picture, when they say that the minors are mature enough to make decisions about their gender at these very, very young ages, that's also implying that they are mature enough to make decisions about consensual sex as well, which, by the way, they're not. But we have 21 House Republicans, even in case you think this is simply Democrats, 21 House Republicans pushing to make transgenders a federally protected class. And this article has them listed. And I was really surprised to see some of these names on here. Many of them, I'm not surprised. And Adam Kinzinger, of course, I'm not surprised to see him doing something like that. But this name, I was very surprised. Burgess Owens, the retired football player, who I thought was conservative. He's talked about community, talked about family, things like that. This is to push to make transgenders a federally protected class. Now, you might look at this and say, this is sponsored by Chris Stewart, a Republican from Utah. I think he is, maybe he's a Democrat that sponsored it. This is a list of 21 House Republicans who did that. I don't see his name on there, so he must be a Democrat. Anyway, they call it the Fairness for All Act. That was sponsored in 2019 by Chris Stewart. It is an all-Republican bill that would make sexual orientation and gender identity a federally protected class in exchange for specific right to discriminate carve-outs for dissident religious organizations. You see? What is this about? Well, what they're saying is, no. What we're going to do is we're going to protect your religious liberties from being encroached by the Equity Act, if they get that through, or the Equality Act, that would punish you if you don't embrace LGBT in your church or your church school or your Christian charity or whatever. And or as we pointed out in the it was just passed by the House, this Build Back Better Act says that you are not going to get federal money for your preschool, even if it's a Christian preschool. You're not going to get federal money unless this Christian preschool pushes LGBT to 3 to 4-year-olds. And I said yesterday when I talked about that, I said, well, you just have to think, are you going to serve God or money? Can you be bought off that easily? And let me just say that these 21 Republicans who think that they're doing a good thing, we're going to get your religious carve-outs here. We've already got a religious carve-out. It's called the First Amendment. It's called the 1963 Civil Rights Act. It's called the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act. We have the Constitution. We have multiple laws that say that we've already got a carve-out. You don't need to compromise with these people, and you don't need to compromise these principles. You need to fight this, and these people aren't going to fight it. Shame on these people. And shame on the Christian organizations who are wringing their hands and saying, wait a minute, don't cut off my money. You've been bought and sold. It's just disgusting. Let's take a quick look at what is going on with the mandates. You know, last week I reported that in Florida, DeSantis had called a special session. And at the time, Politico was calling it political theater, right? Because if you're doing what people want, that's political theater. But if you're doing what the globalists want, that's science, right? So this isn't real. our science is real because our globalist leaders say so. That's the position of Politico. So they criticize a special session as a political theater. So they met last week, and as they were meeting, Politico goes in and quotes the Florida House Democratic co-leader who said, "This is about whipping up people's fear. A lot of this is fear-based." That's exactly the opposite. Again, psychological projection of what they're doing. They're the ones who are pushing fear. Like Dr. Mark McDonald's book, The United States of Fear. Everything they do with this lockdown, the pandemic, the tyranny, the draconian society, that's all based on fear. They're the ones who are basing it on fear. These people are the opposite. They're not afraid of COVID. They realize that the biggest disease, the worst disease, is tyranny. That's what they're afraid of. So they said, well, so a lot of this is destined to pass. So let's talk about what these people did pass, because it's good. It was on November the 18th that they pushed this through. So it was actually finished on Thursday. Here's what they did with this special session. And, again, trust no one. I'm not a DeSantis supporter. I'm a supporter of legislation that opposes everything about this lockdown and draconian matter. And if it's done by DeSantis, I'll give him a thumbs up. Here's what they did. First thing, private employer vaccine mandates are prohibited. They put in numerous exemptions, including but not limited to health or religious concerns, pregnancy or anticipated future pregnancy, and past recovery from COVID-19. Next thing, employees can choose to opt for periodic testing as an exemption. That's not good. Second thing is, employers, you should not have to be tested. That should not be there's absolutely no justification anywhere, any time, for healthy people, at the very least, to be tested. No way can you impose this on people. I'm not going to accept that, and you shouldn't accept that either. That is a very, very dangerous precedent. So that's the worst thing that's in here. Employers must cover the cost of testing if that is a compromise position. And let me tell you, it is a compromise, and it is a seriously bad compromise to have that there is testing. So it's a little bit better that they can't charge people for the testing, but that is not a good compromise. Employers who violate these employee health protections will be fined. Small businesses, that is 99 employees and less, can get $10,000 per employee violation. Medium and big businesses will face up to $50,000 per employee violation. Again, that is excessive, even though I disagree with the policy. The reason that's there is because Biden has put in excessive fines. So instead of saying we have the Eighth Amendment prohibiting excessive punishment and fine, and we've all sworn, even at the state level, to uphold and protect and defend the Constitution, we're going to forget that. We're going to get into a pissing contest with Biden over fines. And if he has them up really high, we're going to go up really high as well. Because Biden, starts out, if it's not willful, just under $14,000. So they make it $50,000. But Biden's can go up to $140,000 because, hey, there's no limit to anything the government can do. It's whatever they can get away with today, and they can get away with anything. Continuing on with this, some of this is good. Government, most of it is good. Government entities may not require vaccination of anyone, including employees. Educational institutions, schools may not require students to be vaccinated. School districts may not have school face mask policies. School districts may not quarantine healthy students. You shouldn't be able to test them either. Students and parents may sue school districts if they violate this, and they can recover costs and attorney's fees. So most of that is very good. And contrast that to what is happening in California. In L.A., they are preparing to kick 44,000 unvaxxed kids out of school. This is from Reason Magazine. They say L.A. Unified School District, the country's second largest school district, said that they have about 44,000 students who have not been vaccinated. They have a hard deadline for a second shot of December the 19th, 3 weeks before the new school semester begins. All students who do not comply will be shunted to a remote independent study program they call City of Angels, which, according to the LA Times, has been beset by staffing shortages and instability. Parents of students with special needs have been particularly upset. Many students have waited weeks before being able to receive any meaningful instruction, so they're going to put them in there. Right now, they have 16,000 students, and this place that where students are having to wait weeks before they get any meaningful instruction, and it can't handle 16,000 students, they're just about to triple that in size overnight. Remote learning, which was imposed upon California school kids from March 2020, despite the Golden State's famously temperate climate and generous outdoor school space, has been well documented as an educational disaster, and they're getting ready to jump into that even more. Pharmacists, however, have a solution to this. As the Wall Street Journal is pointing out, they have a way that they can manipulate kids. And I got to say, this is another thing that is just sick. You've got the drugstore vaccinators, as they put it. They're working on telling jokes. They're going to dress up like clowns, like jugglers. Maybe they can do some of the balloon animals and stuff like that. Maybe not, because you know, if you're playing with needles, maybe you don't want to do the balloon animals. Anyway, they're dressing as superheroes, doing all this to ease the kids. Ease the kids. Well, I don't know. This is just beyond creepy, what is being done to our children. We know how harmful this is, and yet they're applauding this, by the way, at Wall Street Journal. They're not criticizing that. Oh, they think that's a great thing. Because people are now taking their kids down to 5 years old. They're taking them into the stores, these pharmacies, and I hope that we can, if these kids are damaged, I hope they can sue these pharmacies out of existence, these big chains, CVS, Walgreens, Walmart, just as they've sued them in two Ohio counties for the opioid epidemic. They should know. If they don't know, don't really care at this point. If they don't care enough to take a look at what is going on, and if they care enough to take a look at what is going on, you just can't miss it. In Florida, all of the school districts are now complying with the ban on mask mandates. And again, that came with economic penalties that were there, and that is upheld. And that's the thing. You have to applaud the fact that they are doing something in Florida other than just kicking this, you know, over into the court of the court. And saying, here, you judges, fix this. No, they're working on things that they can do to stop this. As DeSantis said, we need to stop bossing people around. We got to stop the coercion. We got to stop browbeating people. No Floridian should lose his or her job over the COVID shots, and no one has more authority over a child's upbringing than his or her parents. Again, 100% right about that. In Oklahoma, a bill to allow workers to sue employers for $1 million if they are harmed from the vaccine requirements. Absolutely. You make me do this and for my job, and if I'm harmed from this, you should pay for it. I'm very happy that they're doing this. Biden's chief of staff, as this is going before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, they said, as I pointed out last week, now, of course, it's now before the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. But what the Fifth Circuit Court said, they said the rare government pronouncement that is both over-inclusive and under-inclusive. It's over-inclusive because it applies to employers and employees in virtually all industries and all workplaces in America. There's no attempt to recognize the obvious differences between risks in, let's say, a security guard who's working a lonely night shift and a meatpacking worker who is shoulder to shoulder in a cramped warehouse. They don't care. Treat them the same. It is under-inclusive because it purports to save employees where there's 99 or more of them from grave danger, quote-unquote, in the workplace. They put that in quotes, mocking it, while making no attempt to shield employees with 98 or fewer coworkers from the very same threat. Now, the key thing, and I've mentioned this before, that they called out, they realized that the basis for all of this was
emergency.
That's right. Everybody. And it is a purported emergency, they said. The mandate's stated impetus, a purported emergency that the entire globe has now endured for nearly 2 years. So it's no longer an emergency, they said, and for which OSHA itself spent nearly 2 months responding to it. That is also unavailing. And then they pointed out that Biden's chief of staff, Klain, had retweeted Stephanie Ruhle when she said, OSHA is doing this vaccine mandate as an emergency workplace safety rule. It's the ultimate workaround for the federal government to require vaccinations. And so he saw that and he retweeted it. And the Fifth Circuit Court referred to that. You see, when we see corporations taking away free speech, when we see corporations that are pushing this mandate, this is always from the very beginning. It was strategized by the New England Journal of Medicine. It wasn't about medicine. It wasn't about politics. It wasn't about science. The New England Journal of Medicine was strategizing politically how they could push these vaccines on people. And they said, we don't want to have a due process challenge, so let's do it through the corporations. It was always going to be through the corporations to push these Trump shots. And so the court said, because you retweeted this, you knew that you didn't have the authority for this as a vaccine mandate. This is a beard. This is using these people as a, you know, deputizing them to push this thing through. So now the Biden administration, after they've drawn the ping pong balls, and they say, all right, the appeal will be heard by the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Biden administration, it was 2 days after they published the rule that you had a couple of judges at the Fifth Circuit Court slam this thing down. And then the panel, full panel of judges at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal heard it and upheld all that. And so now he's going to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And he says, simply put, delaying the standard would likely cost lives many lives per day, in addition to a large number of hospitalizations, other serious health effects, and tremendous expenses, said the White House lawyers. Well, if that is true, then maybe you should ask them, why did you delay for 2 months? If this is emergency, and if you've got many lives per day that this is costing because people haven't been vaccinated, first of all, we know the vaccines don't save lives. Well, let's just pretend that they did. Let's pretend for a moment that they actually worked. Let's pretend for a moment that they're not biological kill shots, these Trump shots. If that was true, then you're the ones who not only waited 2 months to put out your regulation, your emergency rule, but then you also extended it another month, both for the companies that are 100 employees or more and for the federal contractors. You haven't extended the deadline for the direct employees of the federal government, but you extended the deadline for the other two categories another month. So if you are saying that this is going to cost many lives per day, how do you justify extending it for another month? How do you justify taking 4 months to do this? Because, you know, we're told it's emergency. The administration argued that the Fifth Circuit Court's assertion that the mandate would deal significant economic damage to the U.S. is incorrect. Oh, yeah, firing 10% of the people, that's not going to do anything, is it? We've already got very high unemployment rate. And so I pointed out the highest the unemployment rate got during the Great Depression was it briefly 1 year, got just over 20%. It was like 21% or something like that. And yet, most of the time, it was hovering around 10 to 13%. You got a higher percentage of people. You're talking about some of the federal employees and agencies like TSA, 40% of the people not vaccinated. You got the trucking industry that said 37% of the people, said the CEO of the Trucking Association, said 37% of the people aren't just no, they're hell no. They're not going to get it. So you're going to take a situation where you're going to create unemployment in some industries, entire industries, that it's going to be double the peak unemployment we had during the Great Depression, and you have the audacity to lie to people's face about this? That's exactly what they're doing. French politician Marine Le Pen has now made her campaign all about stopping this vaccine tyranny. She describes the vaccine passports as useless. She said they are disproportionate constraint on the French people. When asked about it, she said, I am against compulsory vaccination for anyone. She said, we need to have vaccine freedom. It seemed especially appropriate, she said, when you realize a vaccine does not prevent you from getting COVID, it does not prevent you from contaminating others. And she said, I think we got a good example at the top here. They just had a minister, French Prime Minister Jean Castex, who is fully jabbed, and he just tested positive. And this is right after this guy came out and said, everybody has to take this. This is the only way that we're going to stop this. And then he, after being fully jabbed, test positive. The reporter was relentless in attacking her. The reporter asked if she was for or against the COVID vaccine doses or boosters. She says, I don't have to be for or against it. It's not my decision. See, that's the whole point. It is not their decision. And at least she understands that. Do the Republicans understand that? Do the Democrats understand it? And if they do, there's a lot more that they could do to stop this. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.